This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.
3-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Hey now, Weekend Confirmed coming at you for a special, well, if you're in the United States, July 4th holiday edition. If you're in Canada, it was Canada Day earlier this week. And if you're in the rest of the world, well, hell, it's the beginning of July. It's hot. It's summertime.
Blow stuff up.
Have some fun. All right. My name is Garnet Lee. Great to have you here. Jeff Cannata, awesome co-host extraordinaire here to my left.
Very happy to be back. Thank you, guys.
And we have brought back Mr. Zav D'Amatos from Joystick here at the end of the table.
Happy Canada Day and Independence Day, whatever that is.
By the way, there was a little hockey discussion at the in the pre-show time.
How old all the players are.
There was Jaromir Jagr discussed in there.
Yes.
Anyway, and also Andrew Yoon here at back-to-back episodes, folks. Back-to-back episodes.
Three in a row. Keep on getting dragged into this.
It's, I know.
You're trying to get out, but they keep pulling me back in.
And you know what? Get accustomed to it, because thanks to the generosity of his backers, Mr. Cannata is going to have a summer Australian vacation.
Well, not a working vacation. Yeah, I'm going to be at PAX Australia, so anybody in Australia listening to this, I expect to see you at PAX.
Weekend Confirmers represent.
Please come out. I have a panel on Sunday. It's literally the last panel before the end of the show.
Well, that's a tough time.
I know.
That is a tough time.
Didn't choose it. Got chosen for me. But hey, I still hope there'll be a big turnout and lots of fun. I think it's going to be a blast. And working on maybe having a sort of bar meetup earlier than that, too. So
that sounds like a good idea. That's always a good idea. Yeah. Especially if it's right before the panel. It's right before the panel, and then you go to the panel. Just like,
then you're all loosey-goosey.
This is so great, guys.
I can assure you that from having done many PAX panels in that way,
yeah,
it's a good idea. It's a good idea. Shane and I,
I'm trying to get Gersman to be on the panel with me.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, we were talking.
Is he going?
A little bit. He's going to be there. We were talking a little bit. I don't know if he's going to be there. If he's leaving earlier than Sunday or not, but we're working on it.
Well, I hope not. That would be cool.
I'm putting it out there publicly, so maybe that pressures him a little bit.
The tradition has to continue, you know. So the very, very first time we did One Up Yours at PAX, when we were like in the little corner of the upstairs of the escalators, Shane and I sat at the bar, and actually I think Luke came and joined us, and yeah, we had a good old time. And We were set for that show, by the way.
Yeah.
We were ready to go.
I was there. I remember. You guys were wasted.
We were not wasted. We were just ready to go. It was just,
having set. Met all you guys and seen you guys drink, you guys were wasted.
Well.
No. It was good.
We might have had a couple of cocktails ahead of time. Anyway, we have a lot to get through on this show, so let's dive right in. We've got, hey, you guys did an awesome job out there in contributing questions. So we will keep the what you've been playing stuff relatively concise, because we just had a show three days ago, including the Last of Us spoiler.
Yeah, thanks for waiting for me for that, despite begging you to wait. So
well,
that I could participate.
The
in that.
audience insisted that we
uh-huh,
go on.
Right.
They insisted that
mm-hmm,
we go on.
Right. Sure.
And I knew that you would want in. So have you listened to that yet?
I have, actually.
All right.
I enjoyed it. In fact, you guys covered it pretty well. Pretty well.
Well, you would like back in. We can always do another one. Down the road.
Down the road. All right. You know, eventually, when there's time. Again, I'm not leaving for 3 weeks or anything.
Well, you're going to be here next week, right?
Yeah, I'm here next week.
All right, so maybe we'll do it next week. Because there's not a lot coming out. I mean,
well,
there's
Zav,
only so many times. Like,
Zav and I could talk about it.
There's only so many times I can stretch the show with, like, you know, questions.
I'll just email you or something.
Yeah,
later.
We'll just talk about we'll it off the air. Nobody wants to hear what we have to say about Last of Us anyway.
They might. They'll just get mad at you anyway. They'll just cuss you out.
That is certainly
true.
And
then you'll read the comments and be like, it'll make you sad, and you'll want to post things, and you know how that goes.
Why even do the show, right, Garnet?
We just stop now. All right.
Spiral of sadness.
Click.
Well, thanks for inviting me, guys.
Yeah, welcome to this summery happy show.
We do have a lot of games to discuss. However, Zav has had a chance to play some of the Saints Row 4 preview build. He's also been playing EVE Online, which is great, because I was curious about it, and he specifically put it here in the notes. for me, we've become the people who are catching on to what PC gamers have been playing for like the past 3 years.
Well, can I?
Past 10 years, Reeve.
Because I'm also playing World of Tanks.
Right, which is hugely popular. Yeah. But the one thing, I was gone last week, and the reason I was gone is because I was attending a flurry of weddings. It seems like all I do is attend weddings now. But one of the weddings was my cousin's, and my 7-year-old nephew was there. And
so your cousin wasn't getting married to your 7-year-old nephew, right? Just making that clear.
Well, is there something wrong with that?
Yeah, problem.
What that? State was this in?
Yeah. Come on.
It's the slippery slope, man.
Hey, man, as soon as that announcement happened. I don't think we talk about Minecraft enough on the show. Honestly.
Okay.
Because it is, I think, I'm going to overstate it, but I do believe it is single-handedly bringing kids into video games. It is it is the most
important. I think
important,
single-handedly is overstatement, but you are
it is the most important game to under a certain age. It is literally they eat and breathe and sleep it. It is all Minecraft all the time, and it's crazy to me. Like that game is a phenomenon.
My on a Facebook sample size of my brother of one person, I would say that is 100% true.
Yeah. But I ran into another friend of mine has two young boys, an 11-year-old and a 8-year-old, and I saw them this weekend as well. And I was like, "Hey guys, what video game are you playing?" And before they said it, I said Minecraft, and they went, "Yes, Minecraft!" It is the entire world to a certain age group.
And I can anecdotally also support this because all my friends, especially on Facebook, who have kids, they all the time are talking about, you know, their kids are doing this in Facebook, in Minecraft, or that in Minecraft. Yeah. I agree. I agree that it's huge. I don't know about single-handedly. I think that there are a number of other big games in there that have had lot to do with it.
I think it's this generation's Pokemon. Like
I don't even know. I don't even know if Pokemon is stating it large enough. I'm trying to relate it to my own childhood. Like the way I see them talk about it, it is so all encompassing and like full of magic and wonder.
That's
you know
how I felt about Pokemon. Granted, I was like 21 when I got into Pokemon, so maybe that's not.
Because I remember like what I said on Twitter was I remember playing Metroid. The first Metroid on NES, and you would like on the playground, people would be whispering about, oh, if you do this or you go there, you can get that, and you can find the rockets, and you're like, oh shit, there's rockets in the game, oh my god, or like you get to the end and she takes her helmet off, it's a girl, it's like that kind of, there's a whole world inside this game, and I just discover it. That's kind of how I hear my nephew talk about Minecraft. It's just amazing and inspiring to listen to.
Well, and it also really taps into the whole youthful creativity playing with building blocks thing, right? I mean, obviously, because it literally is comprised of moving around blocks, but I also am trying to get to the, more thoughtful part of the creative process where it's about, like, I can go in and build all these things. I can do whatever I want to. I can build my own fantasy world within this Minecraft world. And
I'm amazed at how successful it is, considering how difficult it is to purchase that game.
It's not that difficult.
It is. If you don't have a credit card. If you're unfamiliar with how digital.
Well, I think that one thing that has really helped it out is that it's been a product of the really first strong adult generation of gamers where moms and dads have Xboxes.
Well, I'll tell you this. Again, this is all anecdotal just from my nephew, but he's playing it almost exclusively on his iPod Touch.
On his iPod Touch,
First person with touchscreen controls.
Interesting.
Strange, right?
No, not necessarily, because the thing is, it's very accessible, and you can get to a number of places, but I have seen a lot of kids who are getting to it through their parents' Xbox console, because it's available on Xbox, and it's a good, easy, cooperative play, so that, father, mother, son, daughter can play together on the couch, so it's a building experience, right? And you have that fun, creative environment, and again, you talk about access, that does make it easy, especially if, like, the parents put points onto their gold membership or whatever.
Yeah. And relating it to, as you were bringing up World of Tanks and EVE Online, these games that are, it seems to me, as an outsider looking in and one who isn't in that culture of those specific games, that it seems like you play those games, you play that is the game you play, and you don't play other things.
So that was going to be one of the questions I wanted to ask was, how much do you think, though, that this Minecraft indoctrination that you're describing really gets people into video games?
I think that what I hope happens is that it starts those kids expecting something of video games that I hope we see more of, which is a sandbox for creativity and a real open-endedness that we see more of and allows for an expression. Like the thing that my nephew does in that game is expresses himself.
Right. But it's a big difference between what you were describing as a kid playing Metroid with shared experiences around narrative and characters and play experience and just this wide open, I'm doing this incredibly creative, crazy thing.
Right. Well, I had that experience in my living room with Lego.
Right.
You know,
we all, and I agree. I was a Lego kid too. So I get that, but I don't, playing Legos at home didn't lead me to doing something else in that space, but
you went to architecture school.
All right, get the hell out of here. Don't mess up the show. You know what I'm saying is, like, I'm still wondering though, like, how much if I'm really playing Minecraft, how much am I actually getting drawn into gaming, and how much am I just really there for all of the, especially if I'm like, you know, 9 to 14, you know, I'm just there for like the creative expression piece. And then would I be disappointed when I go to play a game, you know, like The Last of Us, and it's so structured?
I don't know. I think that, I mean, they definitely scratch different itches, but I'm hoping that there'll be more of both. And
I mean, I think, you know, if you play Minecraft on a PC, it sort of teaches you the WASD controls, mm-hmm. that, you know, and that introduces you to the language of games. So it might not necessarily equip everyone with the you know, desire to play more video games, but it certainly teaches them the language and the skills necessary to play other video games. You know?
Or better yet, how much of this questioning that we're going through right now is a product of us being old and thinking about it in the wrong way, which is that we're even worried about whether or not the next generation will grow up into video games, because video games are just going to be part of their life, and they don't need to have something to get them into it.
That's
because
true.
They'll already just be there. You didn't need something to get you into television.
Right. It
just
was.
It's just there. You didn't need something to get you into movies and books. They were just there.
Yeah.
And then I think the same way, like this generation, just like, it's just going to be there.
I think that's probably true. But it's also very encouraging to me. I brought it up because I was so moved by the magic that it seemed to bring to his life. Like his eyes would light up and he'd tell me about discovering this thing in the game.
That's really cool.
You know? Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Oh, have you ever, you know, I tried to get a diamond pick and this and that. And oh, did you know that you can bring in a lava waterfall in this part? And it's like all this stuff, and they know all the names of everything. And it's just, it's awesome to see that age so delighted by a video game world. It's cool.
It's all right. We still have our games that we take delight in.
True.
We still have our games.
I agree.
I remember when you started playing Minecraft, you were really into it.
I was.
You could probably go back and watch that old TRS episode where you and Alex and Dan were talking about it.
Yeah.
And the three of you sounded like 7-year-old kids talking about it.
It's true. It's a game that does that to anyone, really. Exactly. It's wonderful that way. And I think it's no fluke that it's so successful. And I also sort of mourn the loss of being able to have one game that I just, you know, like as a kid that age, you can sort of just have that one thing that all your friends talk about and you talk about, and you just, it's the one thing you do. So maybe you guys with Eve and World of Tanks are getting a taste of that as well.
Well, and I think you still have it to a degree because Magic keeps coming back and you are definitely in love with that.
I cannot play enough Magic the Gathering, but that also...
And it
gets refreshed every year, you know.
It would be more difficult for them to refresh a Minecraft in a similar fashion.
Mm. Well, but Minecraft is more like a season of
all the
season.
Though.
It's like a sports season, you know. Like 2014, the new roster is out,
and they're constantly introducing new cards and changing the elements and
adding new tweaks to the rule set and all that stuff.
And Eve has been around for a decade now, and they just released their 19th expansion.
Oh my god!
The free 19th free expansion.
That
with Odyssey.
That is kind of outrageous, isn't it?
You know, the interesting thing about Eve Online is, so there's two things. One, it is the only MMO that has never dropped in subscriber base since its release.
It has never, even with all the ebb and flow, it's never dropped.
But it never really peaked like some of the others either, right?
Well, the caveat to that is they've only ever had 500,000 people playing it. up until now, but it's never gone down in subscription.
What do you mean
base.
Up until now?
Well, because over the last 10 years, only 500,000 people have subscribed to it, but they've never lost.
Okay.
They've never lost any subscribers over this time.
Is it growing again?
And it's it's still growing. It's never stopped growing. And it grows every time they release a new expansion. And this last one that came out, Odyssey, the 19th, it does a lot of things. Like, it changes some of the structure of how mechanics work, but it also changes UI, makes things a little bit more simplistic. When I was at E3, I interviewed the CCP, the developer of the game, the CEO of that company. His name is Hilmar Pearson. And I asked him, the thing that I think it was the same reason why we never got into Minecraft was because you heard so much about what it was supposed to be, and you sort of felt like you were not in that discussion, so you didn't want anything to do with it because it sounded too crazy. And whenever you hear something about EVE Online, at least in the major press, for games, is that it's, you know, these people betraying each other, companies like these corporations of community members that take the entire economy of the system, crashes it down to the ground, destroy ships, and there's all these great stories that you love to read, but you don't want any part of that because it's sort of,
well, I would say deflects. Worse than that, I have the worst nonsensical misconception of what EVE is in my head. Somehow I have just little bits and pieces, so I think,
yeah, it's weird, like economic simulation posts,
right?
You know,
it's like I don't actually have, if someone asked me like, so what does it look like when you're playing EVE, I'd be like,
yeah,
well,
there's,
yeah,
a stock, there's, ticker, I think, at the bottom,
I think, all right, I'd be like, I think
it looks like watching CNN, yeah, the 24-hour channel.
I think you like are mining,
sure, you start something and then you leave your computer for a while, yeah, and it does something like 2 days, and then,
well, there is something like, there's a lot of stuff like that,
but I mean, that's the, like, what does EVE look like when you play it?
So there are two aspects to it. There is the player mode where it's just your avatar, which I think they've added in the last maybe 5 years, where you can walk around structures, and it looks like Dust 514 whenever you load that up.
They did add that. They did add that in the last 3 or 4 years, I remember, because you'd be able to go into stations and actually go physically accept missions and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you go into a station and then you can open a menu and physically accept those things, but it's just so you can look at your character and buy clothing for your character, and you have an apartment building that you can go to. It's, you actually can turn that off because that takes the most resources from your computer.
Okay.
So if you have a computer, because the game is scaled over the last decade, you can actually turn that off and never go to that part of the game. What it really is the ship stuff, and with the ship you can do things like mine asteroids, mine entire planets, you can get,
so do you
actually battles.
See your ship in third person?
Yeah, or? Absolutely.
And does it look pretty?
It looks fantastic. It's a lot of skyboxes. Like, it's not like this entire rendered world. Well, it is, but I mean, the backgrounds are all a lot of skyboxes, and it's a huge universe.
Does it look like free space? Does it look like
I mean, a little bit. You know what it reminds me of? Remember there was an old PC mining game called, what is it called? Hegemonia?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 It looks a little bit like
4X
that.
Game.
Yeah. So it looks a little bit like that. It's a lot of like space exploration, and you can team up with people and do a bunch of stuff. So in the beginning of the game, what I wasn't prepared for, which was how much fun I'd have with a lot of like the MMO tedium. So in most MMOs, you go and you're like, go collect 7 pelts.
Yep.
You know, stuff like that. Space this pelts. Game, what it does is you actually go into a lot of tutorial missions to learn how all the systems work. And you basically craft your ship or your character based on what kind of profession you want to have. So I want to do a lot of mining. So I'm mining and going through all these tutorial missions to learn how that works a little bit better. And you're upgrading your ship and you're upgrading your skills and stuff. But a lot of the stuff that I enjoy about it is, you know, there are passive skills that you can sort of open up your menu and say, I want to learn this skill, and it'll take X amount of time to do it, and it can learn as you're not playing the game. But the reason why I wanted to bring it up really is because explaining EVE Online is really boring.
Too late.
is to talk about how that conversation I had with Hilmar Pearson, which was, do you think that those great stories that make EVE seem so interesting actually hurt the community because it deflects people from actually wanting to enter it because it seems so complicated?
Huh.
I mean, have you ever thought of, you've read those stories about EVE Online and you have this idea of what it is. It is this economy simulator, and it is, you know, you make one mistake and you can destroy the entire economy of this world. I mean, have you ever read of those stories?
Well, yeah, and the stories have also left me with a sense of, if I were to go play this game, I would be one number amongst a very, very large number, And I would need to go find a bunch of people that I wanted to go join their corporation with. But there's a whole bunch of politics and intercorporation and extra corporation politics that go on and all that. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I was thinking, well, God dang, I do, you know, social relationship stuff in the real world all the time. I don't want to have to do that just to go play this game. And I don't know how much fun I would have with that. But then I thought, well, maybe that is part of the fun, is projecting. I mean, it becomes a role-playing game. I mean, it very much becomes a role-playing game of you projecting your player into this real world.
Yeah. And the thing that I like about it too,
this real virtual world.
It's not like Mass Effect where, you know, it is the all story, or the, you know, the one guy who's going to save the universe. It's never one person in EVE Online that's trying to save anything. It's sort of you coming into a world, bad comparison, like Second Life, and you just do whatever it is that you want to do. And the whole concept of the game is everyone else is trying to get ahead, and it's like the real world where if you want to become the richest person in the galaxy, you do have to team up with corporations, and these people own things like entire planets. So one of the cool stories that I heard about it at E3 was there was this one system in the game that these two warring factions, I think one was Reddit and another company, I can't remember what it was, were fighting over this planet. And for whatever they tried, the Reddit corporation could never win this planet back. And when Dust514 injected itself into the EVE universe, it allowed you to actually go onto the planet and fight on the planet side in a first-person shooter game to affect how sort of the stats were working in the entire universe. And after months and months of Reddit trying to establish dominance over this one planet that had been held by a corporation, within 3 hours, that corporation, with the help of the Dust514 Reddit clan, took over the planet. Because it changed the balance of how the power on the actual the battlefield worked. Because when you mine a planet, you can drop everything like you can drop things like miners onto the planet. You could drop structures onto the planet and try to make money off of this planet. So it becomes a very lucrative place to be.
It's like your gold mine.
Pretty much.
Your gold mine.
So using the Dust players, you can actually change the way that the structure of the entire game works. And it's a little weird because like Dust probably would be way more popular if it was a PC game, but it's a PS3 game on a console that's about to die.
It's a free-to-play game on a very popular home-installed console.
Okay, well, that's unfair. But I will say that no one's playing it now.
No one's playing Dust 514?
Dust 514 does not have a vast population. I mean, and to be fair, neither does EVE. But I think that their intention to put Dust 514 on that platform was to try to get that 70 million, 75 million people who own it the ability to be introduced to the EVE world.
Well, and one of the things that CCP told me a couple of years ago talking about it was that they envisioned a space where those big corporations would be out actively recruiting PlayStation 3 players to go in and play Dust 514 to help them in battles like what you're describing. And I guess that hasn't come to fruition.
Well, it has in the sense of big corporations with these big stories, but that brings you back to the problem of like, this seems really involved, guys. Like, I don't really want to get it in, because if I make a mistake and
So are you playing 514?
No, I don't. They've updated it a bunch and it looks better and it plays a little bit better, but I still can't get into that game. I'm playing EVE.
Are you going to stick with EVE?
Yeah, right now I'm having a little fun with it. I mean, I'm playing with a couple of people that I know, and you know, people in that world are actually really helpful if you have any questions, and the game is structured so it's a lot of tutorials.
I think that relating back to the Microsoft, relating back to the Minecraft thing, mm-hmm. is that one of the takeaways is, just like you were describing these grand stories, is you should also have small stories. I mean, is it creating for you small stories of your play experience? Because one of the things that immediately grabbed me about World of Tanks is that the actual play on the battlefield was structured and worked in such a way that it was creating little micro stories for me of how these battles happen, and that was fun.
Yeah, I mean, there was one instance where I was mining an asteroid belt and a bunch of AI controlled pirates showed up, and I didn't have any weaponry on my ship, and a bunch of other players who were in that area just launched a bunch of drones and destroyed all the pirates before they killed me, and we all sort of like paired up, we created a fleet which gave us a boost when we were all mining. So you sort of
Are you their bitch now, though?
What do you mean?
Because they saved you.
Oh, no. I thought it was a lot of fun, where it was, you know, that game is really easy to die. People will kill you all the right. time if you go into, you know, high security areas or even low security areas. People will just mess you up. So, and I think the interesting thing about it, and God, this is the most anyone's ever talked about, even on a podcast, and I apologize to everyone who's listening to this. The thing that I think is really interesting about that game is how much control the community has over it. Because there was even a point where the company, CCP, was going to put microtransactions in the game, and people found it in the code. And in response, the community attacked an entire fleet of AI-controlled ships that are not supposed to die and destroyed everything and almost crashed the economy just because the company was thinking about putting microtransactions. It hadn't even announced anything. And the company, like, I think at E-Fest, apologized, said they weren't going to do it. And it was, yeah, it was like so much control is given to those players. And I think it's really interesting.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, the very unique piece of it is that they are adamant about keeping that virtual economy as real as possible, to the extent that there's even like an ISK, which is the in-game currency to real currency conversion rate, which is kind of nuts.
Or, yeah, it's pretty crazy. And
I wonder if you can use Bitcoin to buy that.
I don't know. You know, I think I read, it might have been Klepek, because I know Klepek did a lot of stuff on this.
Well, he went over to E-Fest as well and did like a great, great set of articles on the on Giant Bomb about that.
And I think that company actually brings a lot of money into that country, into Iceland.
Well, Iceland is not a huge country.
Well, yeah, but it's funny to think that a video game helps the GDP of a country. And that's what I think is pretty interesting about it.
I wonder, going forward, how many folks who are developing games will continue to study them as sort of this case model example and what they can take away from it. Because I think that it's a trap a little bit in that what they've created is a very unique sort of thing, much like Minecraft is a very unique sort of thing. And I don't know that you can get too much from them because they are their own unique games with their unique appeals that then build that audience, and then they people who go to play for that thing, like World of Warcraft. How many people did World of Warcraft bring into playing computer games? Well, it seems like actually at the end of the day, not that many, because there's still people playing World of Warcraft, but when they stop playing World of Warcraft, we don't really know where they went, but it doesn't look like they went to other MMOs based off those other MMOs' population counts.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's stick around. When we come back on the other side, I will talk a little bit about World of Tanks, and we will see what else. We'll get into a little Saints Row 4 before diving into the long list of questions that you guys sent in for us to talk about. And also, we got the Game Critics Awards Best of E3 2013 to go through. Don Matrick leaving Microsoft. So there's a little news to get into. All kinds of stuff when Weekend Confirmed continues.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game. But what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's gamefly.com/weekendconfirmed and sign up today.
All right, ready to dive back into some stuff. I won't linger too long of World of Tanks because I think I might actually be playing this for a long while over the summer.
You're into it, huh?
So here's what got me. You know, people have been talking about World of Tanks, obviously, for a long time. Big time free-to-play game has been out on PC for years and evolved quite a bit. You know, it's actually pretty to look at now. I guess it wasn't so pretty to look at in long ago times. I'd say long ago times. I guess like a couple, 3 years ago, it wasn't as graphically sophisticated as it is now, but it looks nice now. And what got me to this point was I played the Xbox 360 build while we were at E3. And I was surprised. I was like, I always kind of expected, I have to say, I expected like the driving around in tanks and shooting each other with tanks to be kind of blah. I was like, you know, okay, so it's going to be like driving around with tanks and shooting each other, and that's going to be kind of blah. Turns out, actually, it's really just the opposite. It is, and maybe it's
the
because...
The opposite of blah?
Maybe it's because of the...
Which is Ouya, actually.
That's a Garnet's box quote for World of Tanks. World of Tanks, it's the opposite of blah. Nice. Go ahead.
Maybe because of how many first-person shooters I've played, you know, with Call of Duties and Battlefields and ad nauseum Medal of Honors. It is the perfect opposite in gameplay and mechanics on the battlefield of what's become the commonplace shooter mentality for online. So instead of running around at high speed and just trying to run through and grab guns and shoot people and run around in a circle, it's move around and know where you're going. And yet it still feels like a shooter. I mean, it still feels like a first person shooter. It's just instead of a person, you're a tank. Mm-hmm. And by virtue of being a tank, you have a number of cool things that you can do. So it brings in sort of a mech style sort of feel because, you know, you have different equipment and then you have different strengths and weaknesses. And it doesn't feel ridiculous when when you take a shot and it doesn't kill you, because sometimes you would get hit and you have to learn how to do things like how to position your tank so that when someone fires at you, you use your armor to its best advantage and don't get destroyed by that shot. Now, if you're a light tank and someone's firing like at you from a medium tank and they have a bigger gun, it's probably going to kill you anyway. But you can get into these really cool back and forth duels where you're moving around in a controlled set of space, you know, controlled by virtue of how much area control the other team has from where they can see and versus where you are and where you can take cover and moving around and trying to scout and get a line to shoot back. And so the actual battlefield dynamic of being in a tank and being in tank combat is really fun. It's really quite thoughtful and interesting and takes a lot of getting accustomed to.
When Zav was talking about EVE Online, you kind of explained why you wrote off that game without ever even trying it. And I'll explain to you why I wrote off World of Tanks without ever even trying it. And you tell me if that's incorrect.
Okay.
I assumed that it was for real war enthusiasts. That you have to really be into sort of real life war.
No, I don't think so.
Strategy.
I don't think so. I don't think you have to be into real. I think what they've done that's really clever is that they have lock solid established their credibility for knowing what the historic pieces of all these tanks and battlefields and all that kind of stuff is, but then incorporating it in a way that makes it still a game. In other words, they're doing some really crazy, like, they're to be absolutely fair, there are parts of this game that are like 10,000 foot walls to try and figure out how to get over to how to play the game right. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you can very easily grab a tank, hop in, drive around, and have fun shooting things.
Like, yeah. Battlefield style tanks?
No, because yes, but no, because unlike Battlefield tank style tanks, these tanks aren't going to move super fast and they're not going to be able to fire at crazy rates of speed. And so the whole battle to a degree has been slowed down. Now, there are people who will get in light tanks and put really high rate of fire guns on them and they'll go racing off into, you know, their death. Basically, they'll go kamikaze into the other team. Because, by the way, all the modes in this are team-based modes. Mm-hmm. And they'll go kamikaze into the other team, and they'll, like, you know, blast away with their little flat cannon and then destroy a few. And, by the way, I'm only in, like, tier 2 tanks, and so the highest tier I've seen is 3. And this introduces, like I'm on the cusp of getting to the part that, like, what makes this game sticky after you enjoy. The battlefield part is fun. It's the metagame piece of all the moving parts between your tank, its experience and development, and your crews and their experience and development that make this game like really get its hooks into you, because then it becomes very like strategic RPG sort of thing, right? Where you're building up your tanks and you're building up your crew and you're constantly wanting to battle, because by battling, you're gaining experience for these things. And then as you level them up and they get better at doing different things, you can improve at some of the roles you're figuring out how to do on the battlefield.
It sounds pretty. I don't know what the fuck happened to me, but like in the last couple of years, it's been like Dark Souls, and then EVE Online, And this sounds pretty awesome. I've been playing Arma 3. I don't know when I turned into this person, but it's like, it's so weird that these, I mean, also this would have been a game that you wouldn't have, I know, knowing you, you wouldn't have played this a couple years ago. What
no.
Was it just playing it at the 360 booth?
It was playing at the 360 booth and realizing that the in the battlefield part was really cool, but really cool because it's also, it strikes, I honestly thought it was going to be more slow paced. And more, oh, I need to know how to drive a tank and all this kind of stuff. And to be honest, like, the folks out there who have learned how to drive tanks and know how to use their tanks will beat the living crap out of you because they do know how to use their shit. But there's enough people playing World of Tanks that you can get into pub games, and they're, granted, there's people on their forums who are like, oh, these are the scrubs. But there's enough scrubs playing it that you can have a reasonably fun time playing the game and be learning how to play it at the same time. And that's really what makes it interesting to me. And then the fact that it had all these pieces that to me bring in the role-playing like elements. So for those of you who wondered like how it works in the free-to-play model, the game basically, although it's not pay to win, it is pay to get through things fast enough to not be playing this game until the end of time as you get to higher levels. Because it is a game where if you get into playing it, you're going to wind up wanting to spend some money in it. There's tiers to tanks, and the tiers do not reflect, well, they don't reflect their overall ultimate power. They reflect more their class power in, and here's what I mean. It's that it's more like eras. So every country, there's six countries now in the game, and at the beginning of the game, you get the tier one, there's one tier one tank, and you get that tier one tank open in your garage from every one of those countries. And it's a little light tank, and it was probably made sometime in the 1930s, and it's like really hilarious. They call the German one the LOL tractor, and it's because it was literally like during post-World War I when Germany was by treaty required to not be making military equipment. So they were like developing a secret tank on top of a tractor. so you go driving around in this tractor, but as you go out, it becomes this like back and forth that is, it's almost Diablo-like in that you go out and you play for a while, and then you come back to the tech tree, and in the tech tree, you use some of the experience that you gained to upgrade some of the parts on your tank. And then you go play again, you're like, oh, now my tank's a lot better, I can do some more stuff with it. And you play some more and earn some more experience, and you come back and you level up, but then you get to tier two, and now suddenly there's like five different tanks to choose from. And each one of them has a whole tree that it, so the tanks lead to other tanks, and then each tank,
because it's a whole world of tanks, guys.
Right. So,
oh my god,
it's a world of tanks with six countries.
If you didn't put that together yet, the tanks vehicles, lead to other tanks. You're never going to get anything that's not a tank. Let's just put that out there.
By developing the vehicles, you get to other vehicles, but within each vehicle, you have to research and develop all of these parts that go on it. So there's like this constant go back and forth between like what you're playing, and then what you want to develop and research, and then how you want to play it in the field. And it's kind of a really, it's a very addictive back and forth because you really start to get these big senses of upgrades. Like, I started off in the German line, I did my little tractor, and then I went to the tank I've been playing since then, which is this tier two tank. But as I kept on upgrading it, instead of like jumping up, I had like a couple of upgrades to it. So I put a new cannon in it, and then I put a new motor in it, and suddenly, like, I felt like this tank actually doesn't suck. This tank's actually kind of decent because the matchmaking system keeps you in matches that are relatively well balanced. So, you know, like my tier two tank is going to be like grouped with other tier one, tier two, and occasionally a tier three. And it's going to face off against a bunch of tier two and a tier one and a tier three here and there. And so you actually have a fair fight. So you're not facing, I mean, it's not like I'm going up against these crazy hulking massive tanks that could kill me. And so you're able to start playing. And then once I started playing, I was starting to have these experiences like, you know, like last night I had a match that I thought was really a great match because I came away from it without getting damaged. And I killed three tanks and damaged two others. And it was a really cool experience to be, you know, driving through this city and thinking about like, okay, like I need to stay close enough to these other two guys in my team because the radar isn't really radar. It's visual spotting. And the only way you know what someone else spotted is if you're within radio range of them. So it's like you're creating like a daisy chain of all the team members. Mm-hmm. And as long as you're within radio range and then they're within radio range, then you can see what they're seeing. Hmm. So you get like
that's
these.
Cool.
So scouting becomes a very important part of it. And how good your radio is becomes a very important part of it. And so you're like sort of jockeying around for position. And you really can't sit still, because if you sit still for very long, then the enemy will probably find you. So unlike snipers in like Call of Duty who find like a good spot and settle in and get protected, you know, settling in and getting protected here, you can do it. The tanks definitely equate to classes in a shooter.
Sniper tank.
There is a sniper tank. Tank destroyers, which are a class of tanks that are like tank bodies with very powerful cannons put on them, but light armor. Are the snipers in this game, and those guys will hang back and they will find good protected spots and they'll rely on other members of the team to go spot. But the problem is they are sort of sitting ducks.
What do they call the guy that soaks up all the damage?
They call him a tank. Oh. They call him a heavy tank.
I've been waiting to make a couple of jokes.
They call him a heavy tank.
I think all of this sounds really cool, and I'm still couldn't be less interested in this
game.
Fine. It's just not made for me.
I like the idea of
that's fine.
Of the management sort of situation that you get into, of managing your player skill that you learn over time, the tank skill, and then the crew skill.
It's really cool.
I think that dynamic is what interests me about a lot of these games.
And they are kind of evil about it, because your crew does actually have a really important role in how well your tank performs. And when you go to buy a tank, so you buy the tanks with in-game credits, so that's easy enough to earn. You're always earning credits. When you go to buy your tank, there is also an option to buy your crew trained at different grades of training. So if you don't spend any extra money, you only get them at 50% training. And if you spend like a bunch of credits, then you get them at like 75 or 80%. But if you spend gold, you can get them at 100% training. And the key to 100% training is that when your tank crew is 100% trained, they can also add additional skills. So now your guy who's like your tank driver can also have repair skill, so that, for instance, like one of my tanks, when I slid him down a hill and broke one of his tracks, I was able to back up a little bit and sit there for a minute, and this guy like repaired my track for me.
Sweet.
But you would have to pay a lot of silver or wait a long time, because the experience gain that you get for your crew as you're playing is pretty slow.
Just like real life,
it's pretty slow.
It takes my tank crew the fucking longest.
Oh, I know. It's not the worst.
From having read about it. So I think the upshot of this is that while we've been dismissive of it, I actually think that this could be like a really big deal for Xbox 360.
Well, it clearly is. It has a very strong player base, and it
I think it could be a real surprise.
I'm not dismissing it out of hand. I just don't think it's my type of game.
If I know your type of game, but I think there's a lot there.
It's not in the military that much.
And the other thing is that this to me is what I'd always dreamt of as an online Front Mission. If this was Front Mission Mechs, if this was Wanzers and Front Mission, I would be in like hog heaven. I would be like even more over the top. I mean, as it is, I will definitely keep playing it and fooling around with it. The World War II so the tanks range from like pre-World War II up to, it looks like about the like late 50s, early 60s sort of era, like pre-super high-tech stuff, but you know, post-World War II. But as I understand it from listening to and reading the forums, somewhere around like tier 5 tanks is where the curve for how much experience you have to gain to advance starts getting so high that you have to literally play hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of matches if you don't want to pay to advance.
Mm-hmm.
So
they get you.
But the pay to advance is not that steep, because again, you can decide how much and how many of these tanks you want to improve on. So like you could conceivably, I think, play the game and be paying not a tremendous amount of money, but I could also see the precipice where you could fall in and be paying a lot of money.
I like to think of these free-to-play games as regular games with really shitty progression systems. Like, it just takes a long time to get that progression system going. Unless I actually get interested in a free-to-play game where I do spend money in, which has happened before.
Yeah, I mean, I like the web they've woven. I'm still too early in it to know whether it's completely dirty or just... We're just
well, isn't
tough.
It funny how
I don't mean dirty as in bad. I mean just dirty as in like, oh shit, I'm going to get there and I'm going to really be like locked in.
Wasn't it funny how free to play games sort of by their virtue of their nature, they include with them this meta game where you're playing the how little can I spend on this game? You know, you're playing the.
Well, you know, it's funny you said that. Someone asked me about this. So, and one thing, I mean, World of Tanks, because they have not gotten a ton of press coverage, is pretty like forthcoming about like, oh, if you want to play, like, we'll get you a pumped up, you know, we'll get you gold, we'll get you all that. I jumped into this like exactly like anybody else would. I have not used any codes. I have a couple of little like plastic tanks that I picked up at E3 a couple of years ago that I think are worth 500 gold each. But I'm specifically playing it as I would play it just as a player and not as someone in the press who's like, oh, here's your 10,000 gold, go get your tier 7 tank, because I think that just misses so much of the experience. And I'm kind of glad that I'm not doing that, because a great deal of the fun is in this like developing your tanks and picking which ones to level up and then actually earning the experience to level them up. Like, that's cool. That's the fun of it.
Not earning that stuff can screw you up. When I was playing Dark Souls, I got into a situation where I was playing and some guy just dropped all the high level gear in my game for me, and I picked it up, and then it kind of ruined the experience where I was like, I have all this stuff that I would have, you know, tried to achieve.
Right.
So I had to restart it to
clean
the slate.
I don't even know how you go about like editorially covering free-to-play games. It's the same problem we had with like MMOs, right? It's because like in an MMO, you're trying to cover it, and then of course the PR team is always, well, you know, here's a level 30 character, here's a level 40 character, here's a level 50 character, here's all this stuff. Yeah. And that's great, except you have no fucking clue what you're doing with it. Mm-hmm. or what it means to have achieved it.
At E3 when they're like, sit down and here's a level 20 character, you get to spend all your talent points, and like the first 20 minutes of whatever time you have with the game, you're like looking at the talent trees, like, I want that or that.
It's like demoing a Final Fantasy game at E3 is always the worst.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just difficult to sit down and get bombarded with.
And you really
system.
Can't relate the experience because you haven't earned any of it. You don't get any of that. Sure. You don't get that dopamine shot. It's like, so, you know, Ariel and I finished Tiny Tina's Assault on Dragon's Keep over the weekend, and I think prior to this, there was very little. We did a little bit of Ultimate Vault Hunter because you have to go to Ultimate Vault Hunter to start getting weapons over level 50 to drop. And then we went back to True Vault Hunter to do Tiny Tina's, and then we got to the end of that, and we're like, you know what? I think we want to go back and play some more Ultimate Vault Hunter because we both want to get to the bottom of a second tree in the skills trees. And it's just for that. It's like, I just want to go back to get to the bottom of the trees in the second skill trees. And I have like two full skill trees maxed out.
That's funny,
and because it starts to mean like, you know, you're invested in it and you're like into it, and there's no way having gotten, if someone said, here's all this stuff, that you would have that same experience, because you'd be like, okay, so this is cool. So what?
Yeah.
I mean, I got the ability for my assassin where every so often his gun will proc and fire twice for one shot, which is awesome, because now all of a sudden, coupled with his crit ability, he's like randomly ridiculously deadly. And it's really fun to play, and it's really meaningful, because like all of a sudden I'm like, that was exactly what I got for level 52. Awesome.
Yeah, you brought up Magic the Gathering, and I've been playing Duels of Planeswalkers 2014, which recently came out on every conceivable platform, and I have the same experience there, where you can pay to unlock decks, whole cloth, you know, like you get the entire deck unlocked, and there's something fun about that, because like, oh, I got to try out this new deck. Or you can grind out wins and unlock one card, two cards, you know, four cards, maybe if you're lucky on a certain battle. But I enjoy that. Like, I love going back and just replaying certain matches, because a lot of them can happen in completely different ways. Just unlock a couple of cards here and there. I actually dig that part of it. I dig the grind, because each match is
dig the
different.
Grind.
Yeah.
I like
it's,
that.
As Dan used to always say on TRS, it's the good suck.
And you know what? Since we're like down the MMO rabbit hole, Final Fantasy XIV coming back, I sort of have been strangely feeling like I want to play it.
No, don't let them do it to you.
Why?
It's like the 19th time they've released this terrible, shitty
game. But it's
supposed
to be fixed now. It's all
better now. It's always supposed to be fixed, Garnet. What are they going to press release? Still sucks. Play it tomorrow. I'm like, no, it's still terrible. Every single fucking this is like, how many times have they released this game now, Andrew?
Just the second time.
No,
just
still
the second time.
No, but then it shut down because of the disaster that happened in Japan,
right.
And then they brought it back because it didn't work very well the first time, and then this is the second major re-release that they've done to try to fix it. But the game came out 2 years ago now.
Well, it came out. Then they shut it down.
Yeah.
Then they did a very lengthy quote-unquote beta period of a Realm A Realm Reborn. So that's what it's called.
Beta tested it after it was released, after people bought it.
So Final Fantasy 14 came out. Yeah. And it was a disaster. And
it was unfinished. By all accounts, it was unfinished. And they shut that down.
They, like, fired everyone that worked on it.
And then
a few months later, they announced, hey, we're doing Final Fantasy 14 again. And then a few months after that, they launched an early version of A Realm Reborn for the people that were already subscribers to Final Fantasy 14 to play. That's technically the game that's officially coming out.
Have you been able to play it at all?
I played a little bit, and I'm just not an MMO person, so I'm just like, I'm clicking things.
I'm so bitter by that whole situation, because it's like, there've been people who have still been paying a subscription to this game that has sort of been in flux for the last two years.
I thought they turned off the pay. They turned off the pay for
a long time, but I think when they relaunched,
they reactivated the subscription model.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure, Zav, I'm pretty sure, I mean, we can pull this up during the break, or we can look at it in the show notes afterwards. I'm pretty sure that they actually suspended subscription charges.
I'd rather just be blindly angry at the game than know facts about it.
Well, I mean, look, there's no denying that Final Fantasy XIV was released in a horribly unready for release state in its initial form, and that trying to relaunch an MMO is a pretty ballsy move, especially a subscription MMO, when subscription MMOs right now are just dead in the water.
It does help that they're launching on a completely new platform, to coincide with the quote unquote official launch of the game.
Well, I hope I'm proven wrong. I mean, if there are people who are listening to this who would love, if they play that game or if they're interested in that game, I would love to know why. Just because, like, at this point, I mean, it's the same. It's the Microsoft situation. People are bitter at what, Microsoft made a change in their policy, and people are just like, they don't want to go to it because of all these problems that have happened.
I wonder if people who are really interested in this game, do
they have that same bitterness towards this product?
I have fond memories of 11, because 11 of all the MMOs I've ever played had the most natural fostering of group play, and I think maybe it was also somewhat because of the audience that chooses to play Final Fantasy versus the audience that chooses to play World of Warcraft. But I had a good link shell. I played with Milky all the time.
Milky used to write those great articles for Gamer Magazine.
And like, it was cool just to even like hang out and be around him, because his character was always like super maxed out and leveled up and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. But there was just even pickup groups in 11 were like, they were always pretty much reliably decently good pickup groups, and people knew how to play, and there was a good sense of decorum inside any zone, and people played it was just a fun place to play, and I fell out of playing it, and then I just never got back into it. But like, I was like, well, 14 could be your chance to.
But I mean, will people be willing to pay a subscription
to play an MMO
nowadays?
I mean, that's a damn good question.
That's just crazy.
I think the Guild War models is real. The Guild Wars model is the best possible way that people could go nowadays. I mean, yeah. People try to compete constantly with what World of Warcraft was, because even World of Warcraft isn't World of Warcraft anymore. Nope. So I think it's free to play model, or the Guild Wars model, which is, you buy this product and they update that product with premium expansions. I think that makes more sense.
I think that the model that has happened is that these top tier, really high profile games, MMOs, come out with a subscription fee. They milk that as long as they can, and then they go free to play.
Yeah, well,
so
that's
they get the early adopters. SOE in them. Yeah. What's that?
That's SOE's done that for all of their games.
The early adopters, they charge the subscription fee. People are really excited about the product, and they go as long as they can with that, and then they have this reboot where they go, oh, we're going to be free to play now.
But and isn't Final Fantasy XI still around?
Yes.
And isn't it still premium?
And they've still released like new expansion packs for it. Like,
I remember when I used to work at GameStop, where we'd get those, like the expansion and the game for the PlayStation 2, and it was this giant package. I'm like, first of all, I don't know a lot of people who are playing this game on PC, let alone on the PlayStation 2. It's just, and that game is still premium now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's still premium, and from what I hear, it still has a community. I mean, the fact that they still release expansion packs,
that's the EverQuest 2 challenge. I think maybe it was Jeff that brought this suggestion at one time, but I would love to be able... The reality of me playing 14 is it probably doesn't happen because I enjoy too much... I'm back to the sequence of playing games like Last of Us and enjoying like the like new experiences, Remember Me and Metro, and going between those. And you can't do that and manage an MMO.
Right.
And I'm wondering whether or not World of Tanks can be a game where I could just dip in and play some here and there. Because I would love an MMO like that, but to me the free-to-play model is great. And I think it was you who mentioned one time, like, it would be great if you were playing a game like that and you could just say, you know what, I want to play this weekend. I'll pay $1.99 to play this weekend. Mm. And I, like, where I don't know how that works out. And maybe it's something where during the week I could turn it on for an hour and play and not pay. But over the weekend, if I wanted to pay, so one of the things that World of Tanks does in one of its scenarios for pay is that you pay for a premium membership. And the premium is that while you have that active, you earn double experience, which is a huge
A lot
boost.
Of games do that. Yeah. And I think that, and that's a really attractive, what was the freaking game I did that a bunch with? It was that free to play.
Hawken?
No. It was the third person shooter. It was the G. Can't remember. I think that's a really attractive bargain because you go, you're going to get this for 24 hours or 48 hours.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I'm going to carve out maximum amount of playtime in this period and just go for it and try to level up as much as I can. And then I can lay dormant and, you know, play the free model for a while and then do that again. And, you know, So it really works around when you have the time to devote to it, which is cool.
I will say that quickly back to Eve, not to bore everyone again, but that is a premium game. It has always been a premium game. However, you can actually earn in-game credits and purchase an item in the game called Plex. And this one item called Plex, I think it hovers around $500 million. You can purchase it. And that one Plex buys you 30 days of game service. So the top tier players who play EVE Online never pay for the game because they're buying that in-game item that they can redeem for their subscription fee.
Well, that's kind of rad.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're rewarding the hardest core players who are their best and really integral parts, the anchors community.
And it forces you to keep playing it, which is why it still grows.
All right, that is pretty cool. All right, stick around. We will jump right to your questions here because I got a bunch of them. I'll make sure we don't lose those. And then maybe by the end of the show, we'll also get some news and other stuff in. Don't go anywhere. Weekend Confirmed continues. This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get up-to-the-minute gaming news along with thousands of HD videos and screenshots. Get into the action by creating your own profile, post updates about what you're playing, and stay connected with friends and other gamers. Tired of standing in lines? Find great deals on new and used games, pre-order upcoming titles, and get Gamefly's daily deals all from the palm of your hand. If you're already a Gamefly member, manage your game queue on the go and keep games you like with just one tap. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. All right, the commentary in the break was, this podcast is from 2002, and everybody has gone to sleep. So let's move right along. Okay, audience question time. First up, Drew Paulson, a regular listener, second lieutenant, Drew Paulson. Thank you very much. He wrote in with this one, said, what do you guys do with your game collections when a new console generation comes along, and how will Steam and digital games affect this?
Wow, you know, that's one of the biggest gripes, I think, about no backwards compatibility is, like, all of these arcade titles, these downloadable titles that I paid for, they're just, what, in the they don't exist, they're just gone?
Well, as Don Matrick said, get a 360.
Yeah, well, he took your advice, I think. Didn't he take your advice and fucked right off?
No axe to grind with Don. I did not tell him to fuck off or whatever. I just said, like,
I think somebody did on that 2 weeks ago on that show.
Anyway.
It wasn't me.
Anyway.
yes, but that is, I mean, I guess if you know,
how about this?
You bought them for that console, you're playing them on that console.
How much library do you have at home? I mean, are you like, so, you know, I think everyone knows that Shane Bettenhausen's library was legendary. Dude has like one of the most awesome collections of classic games
Billy's
and generation-spanning games I've ever seen.
I have like four games.
So you don't keep them?
Two of them I think you borrowed from me.
Yeah, I get rid of games as quickly as I can.
I get rid of games too, but I keep the best of the best. I have a small best of the best game library.
For me, I think because like buying games is just so expensive. I trained myself, you know, ever since like, you know, I got into like N64 games. Like, I just have to beat games really quickly, trade them in when they have the highest amount of value so that I can, like, move on to the next thing.
Gaming is hard work, man.
But I remember, like, and I remember, like, sometimes I would, like, look for the GameStop, like, promotions where it's like, oh, man, you get 50% extra credit. And I remember one time I actually did, like, profit off of playing a game. I think it was Black Ops or something like that.
You'd be great in EVE Online.
Where it's like, the trading value was, like, $40, and then they had that 50% promo, and so you've like, been $60, and then I had the Power Up Rewards card, so I got, like... And I hated that game so much. I'm like, fuck. It was Modern Warfare 2. There we go. Modern Warfare 2. I'm like, oh, God, that was such a bullshit game. And so I just like traded it in. And then I played Assassin's Creed 2, which was like the greatest.
Have you ever seen?
Like, you've been
ever.
Doing the free to play model this whole time.
I've actually seen it working at stores where I knew people hadn't finished a game and decided to trade it in only because the value was higher in a specific time because of a promotion. Have you ever done that where you knew a game, you had a game that you wanted to keep, but if you traded it in
I borrowed Uncharted 3 from you a few weeks ago because, like, I hated that game. You all know I hate that game. And it's still terrible.
Not terrible.
Even the multiplayer, you were talking about matchmaking. So it's like Uncharted 3 multiplayer, they know that there's, you know, players of different skills. They'll just put all the shitty players on one team and all the good players. So it's like you're playing team deathmatch and one team has like everyone at level 10 while the other team has everyone at level 75. And you're like, what the fuck is this bullshit?
At least you've moved the show to 2011.
Yeah,
at least.
That's Uncharted 3. That's my rant. So for me, I'm just like, get rid of all my games. And I love having a digital library. So, you know, I love being able to just...
Well, I'd love having a digital library if it would work. I think Jeff's point about the backward compatibility issue is very, like...
Well, that's why Steam is awesome, because Steam, I can look at all of the huge list of grayed out titles on my Steam library and go, you know what? I want to play that. Click, download, play a little while, delete.
I like just buying things on Steam, even though I have no intention of
actually
playing.
Do you even have a PC?
I don't even have a PC.
I
still buy things on Steam.
You are what's known as the perfect customer.
I literally cannot play any of these games, and I still buy them because I just want that. I want that number that appears in your Steam library to keep on getting bigger. I'm like,
Jesus, wait till he sees trading cards. He's gonna flip.
Jesus Christ!
I just don't have the same sense of nostalgia for the games in this generation that I do. I have to go to the next generation
that
nostalgia.
Yeah, it's hard to feel nostalgic
when it's still the same generation.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, like, even the first BioShock, I could get rid of my copy of the first BioShock and I wouldn't really care. Whereas next generation, I'll be like, oh man, I wish I can go back and play that. Thankfully, I can because it's on my Steam profile, right? But I did have a really big library of Super Nintendo games that I really loved and I really enjoyed playing all those games. And I sold it when I moved out here. To help me move out here, and that was painful, but you know, it got all the clutter out of my apartment, and it sucks, but you know,
yeah,
I can buy that on the virtual
console.
Clutter's
a big deal.
Yeah, Ariel will love to hear you saying that. She's like, some point in time, I'm going to be sitting in her car listening to this, and she's going to look at me like this.
I've seen your shelf, dude, in your living room. Why are there three copies of NBA 2K6 right here? There's three copies. Why?
One's a special edition, one's sealed just in case, and you have your playable.
The only cases where there are duplications are games that she and I both had, like BioShock and BioShock 2. Don't over-exaggerate.
There's some stuff there.
Actually,
it's like,
yeah, I do at home have three copies of XCOM Enemy Unknown.
Okay.
Well, even Shane has talked about how, even though he has all those games and he's happy he has all those games, it takes up a shitload of space.
I agree. It takes
and good luck moving.
Yeah,
dude. That's. I mean, I have a board game collection that is getting way out of hand. And the last time I moved, it was like, oh, fuck. This is hard.
I was like that with books, and I was like, I'm just going to buy everything on Kindle.
Exactly.
Here's the real
downsize.
Is that I used to think I really wanted all this stuff to go back to, and now I realize that I have no earthly clue where my Genesis or all my Genesis games were, no matter how cool I thought they were, and. I realize the same thing will continue to happen with all of these platforms, because as much as you think you're going to pull them out and all that kind of stuff, unless you're a really committed, dedicated classic gamer, which I have mad respect for. As a matter of fact, I was just thinking the other day, I wish that then this is also like the balance back and forth. Part of me wishes that I had bought a really nice 4x3 television when you could still get a really nice 4x3 television.
Like, it's an oxymoron.
But when you could buy like a really good Sony XBR, like I kind of wish I had bought
Stevenson did. Well, he bought that crazy Japanese freaking contraption that puts the lines back in and all that stuff.
The scan line, the yeah. scan line converter.
Stevenson
bought a scan line converter $400 for doing old.
Sounds awesome.
James.
But I mean, just to have like the authentic experience. So the same thing goes for, you know, like old TV shows that are never going to be, you know, never going to be turned into 16:9, and they look weird when you stretch them. But that's neither.
You would really like watch an old TV show on your old TV?
I'm wondering, like, I might, right? Really? Like, well, like, what if you want to go back and watch MASH?
You just want that option.
You can
like,
watch MASH,
it's like I mean. Me, where I want the option to play, you know, the random theme games that I bought, even though
you don't have a computer.
aren't going to.
I know for a fact, unless the Steam box comes out and it's actually cheap, which is highly unlikely. I'm never going to play these games that I bought.
But it starts to change.
But I like the idea that maybe one day I have the option of playing these games.
I would say the digital library, the thing that I don't like about the digital library is if you have the boxes in your house and you can see them, you know what you have at all times. Right. Whereas the digital library, I forget I own stuff. And it sort of just like sits in this list, laundry list of games that you really need to go seek out and find specific
and it's
titles.
Really terrible on the PlayStation Store because the way they do the download list is
it's the worst thing. And Microsoft's bad too because it's just like 10 things that you purchase and you have to cycle through. And then it tells you like, you purchased this trailer from 4 years ago that you had to download because you can stream it. And all this other nonsense is on this laundry list. It's not structured.
You're right. I don't think I need the physical stuff as much anymore. But at the same time, like I love the fact that I have a, you know, mint condition, not greatest hits, original Suikoden. Like that's cool. Like that, and I love that I have it, and I love that.
That's what I'm saying. Like the best of the best. That there's like
I love to have a Vagrant Story like that because those games really meant something to me, and I loved playing them. I don't need to keep a lot more than that.
I think the collector side of me. Instead of keeping games, I buy a lot of art books and figures, so a lot of things where I feel like there's intrinsic value that isn't the game disc. Because I do think that, I don't feel that attachment towards discs, but, you know, you touch my Majora's Mask statue and I will murder you.
I'm slowly holding the collector's side of me underwater and drowning it. I'm literally, I grew up collecting comic books. I have a very strong instinct to collect, and I am suffocating that with every fiber of my being just because my modern life just can't handle that anymore.
And there's so many different games for different platforms nowadays. When we were growing up, it was, you know, two platforms and very few games released throughout the year that you could afford to buy because they were so expensive. So you did keep that stuff because it meant more to you than it does now, whereas you could just go on Steam and buy a $4 game, and it doesn't matter. It's just $4. The value of games has changed, too.
But I tell you what, I have a mint condition still with the box, in the box, Japanese Dreamcast, and a couple of games, and if someone out there would really feel strongly about it and they want to hit me up on the forums or whatever, I will make you a deal for it.
I'm sure there will be only one person that does that.
You never know. There might be. I think I have Sega Rally and Sonic and Dynamite Deca and Japanese Soul Calibur, which was kind of
this awesome. Just turned into an auction show.
I know what happened.
Can't wait to get rid of it.
Garnet stuff. going Garnet.
No, it's something that someone has been after me to get rid of. So
not naming any names.
It was me.
It was Jeff.
Yeah.
Let's moving on.
Yep.
Shadow 13th threw down this one. Who's ready for collectibles to go away next gen?
Clearly not Andrew. You just expressed your love.
Not that kind of collectible.
Yeah. No. Oh, I mean, I don't know. Garnet likes this terrible game called Remember Me, which has the most arbitrary collectibles. It's just like that.
The
that
game is
like,
not terrible.
That is like that is classic like terrible game design.
All right,
like,
here's the rest of the
finish
random.
Question. Yeah.
Let me finish the question so you can have his day in court here. I'd be happy if I never saw another collectible based achievement in my life. It's an uninventive, crude, lazy device to pad a game that does not manifest in any other fiction or narrative. Do you want collectibles to go or to stay? Do they have a place in the future of gaming? And what are some good alternatives?
I like collectibles that are additive to the experience, that are
watermelon slices.
Exactly.
Bananas.
No, that flesh out the world in ways. Last of Us, of course, has, you know, you find notes and bits of
comic books you can't read.
Well, that's the thing that bugs me is you're picking up like dog tags for the fireflies and you're picking up collectibles. And every time I remember, I think there was one specific time, I won't say any spoilers here, but there's one specific time when Ellie and Joel are having a fight, and I think I wandered off and picked up a comic book, and he goes, oh, hey, Ellie, here's that comic book that you like so much.
Oh, I'll read it later.
Yeah, and I was like, well, we're fighting. Wouldn't it be great as if she'd be like, oh, Joel. I wanted there to be some payoff to the comic books, because I just, every time I found one for her, I felt like I was doing her a solid.
There's a trophy if you get them all.
Well, BioShock Infinite was bad with that, too, when you fought with Elizabeth, and then she'd find salts and be so happy about it.
Yeah.
And you're in the middle of this battle. The game that does it really well and poorly is Alan Wake, because they had those pages that added something to the narrative, and then it had all those coffee thermoses and all that other shit that meant nothing. And Assassin's Creed has done like 500 flags.
Stacks of cans. And
yeah, like...
so dumb.
And I'm a... You know me, I'm obsessive about my achievements, so I did collect every... fucking feather in that game, and it's just like arbitrary. Like, why am I doing this? I'm punishing myself.
But I love exploration, and I love being rewarded for exploration, so I'm in favor of the concept of collectibles. I just wish they added up to something more than just an achievement. I wish they added up to, you know,
I think AC2 did a really good job where you unlocked that video if you saw,
but that was one collectible of many collectibles.
But that's the thing, like we've lost a lot of really cool bonuses and surprises in this generation. Maybe you can blame it on DLC, or the lack of Game Shark and stuff like that. But like, we don't really have many reasons to go out of our way to collect these things other than gamer score, right? Like, mm-hmm. that's pretty much the only reward you get. You used to get like big head mode, or
what's cool, finding like
paint gun mode, and
audio recordings are cool. I think, you know, finding the little bits of story that's, you know, a lot of games are doing that.
There's two pieces going on here. The mechanical side, you could easily trace back to the line to like Pac-Man. So you're playing Pac-Man, and the game is swallow pills, get the power pill, reverse things, chew up the ghosts. But every so often, here's a piece of fruit. And then the piece of fruit says, oh, go get the piece of fruit.
I would put it more
on
Super Mario Brothers.
Fruit is more of a... It's more part points. Of the score mechanism.
Okay, but Mario Brothers, and you don't think that...
But yeah, Mario Brothers, like, finding
like coins.
Yeah, it's the coins. Like, coins just give you lives, all right? That's something. But then finding, like, Star Road in Mario World, where you unlock a completely new, like, set of levels, and then finding the secret Star Road within Star Road, I was like, oh my god! It's a secret in a secret! I just got incepted! You know?
Just got incepted. Nicely done.
But these are not collectibles now.
I think that's
secrets and specials, and I think those are a lost art.
But I think, collectibles are fine so long as there's an actual reward to them, and they feel natural. You know, it's really bizarre that, you know.
So the other side of my argument was the piece that Zav introduced, which I do think that the collectible pieces of the story in Alan Wake and how those contributed, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That's something that's additive, and I think that there is a future for doing collectibles in the games, because there's a future for a world where you have more and more interaction and more interactive objects, and having those things meaningful and a part of the game makes a lot more sense than just having them be, you know, whatever the next widget is that you pick up.
You want to talk about nonsensical collectibles. We didn't talk about it, but Saints Row 4 is littered with them.
Saints Row is a nonsensical collective.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Like, how many dildos unlock dildo?
It's big dildo mode instead of big head mode. Well, I guess big head mode, too. But, yeah, no, that game has a ton of that shit, too. So, yeah, I don't know. Hopefully it's something that we can get away from in the next generation if it's not adding to the story. But it also bothers me sometimes, too, where I'm like, 3 out of 4, where's the other recording? And then I'm missing something about the story. And then I, like, freak out and I'm looking for it. Yeah. That bothers me, too, sometimes. So when it does have so much to do with the narrative, like BioShock, some of them were really hidden, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh man, I need to go back, and then I'm going to listen to it out of order now, and like then I'm just like, I throw the disc out the window because I don't want nothing to do with it anymore. It's really hard to do because it's in my computer. So,
Arvin Seidel, Revan Seidel. I've never known how to pronounce his.
I just thought of something. Yes. On that last question.
Yes.
What about this? Is a cool idea for a collectible? A collectible that changes the appearance of your character. Like, you find a hat or gloves or some shit. It's
cosmetic. Why would you do that when you can make microtransactions out of that?
Nah, yeah. RPGs
do that. Can I get with that logic?
You pick up loot in Diablo and it changes your appearance.
Yeah, but that's not a collectible. I'm talking about in a game, like, whatever. You can, I don't know. Just saying.
Well, ahead. Then there's the 99 what are they? Feathers in EC2, and then it gives you a different cape.
There you go.
So there's that.
Rewards. Go ahead, Garnett. Sorry about that.
Riven Siddle says, you guys seem to want a disappearance of violence to solve problems in games, yet when a game presents ways out of a majority of its violence by nonviolent means, you guys jump to the shooty bang bang. Is the dissonance in the games, or is it in the player? Which would lead to an obvious follow-up. If so ingrained in the player, is it possible to ever escape from the dissonance?
This is an interesting question, I think well worded, but the problem is when you are given a problem, when you're given an enemy that stands between you and progression, and the shortest distance between two points is eliminating that enemy violently, even if you're given the option of the more difficult, more time intensive, sneaking around or whatever, the nonviolent thing, it's not on me that I lead to the quickest means to progress. I don't feel like that is a legitimately giving a nonviolent alternative. If I can trank the guy or put him to sleep, I'm eliminating the enemy either way, or I'm avoiding the enemy. The more interesting thing is, what about creating a situation where I have to get from point A to point B, and that's not the obstacle at all? I think that's the more interesting problem to solve.
Instead,
as a
the
designer.
Obstacle is yourself.
What I'm saying is, I feel like if you create a situation where, yeah, you can avoid the violence, but the violence is the easiest way to get from point A to point B.
So there's the problem.
It's kind of unrealistic.
So the variable that I would add to this is that. That happens up to a point at which my doing it another way has a equal or better or different or engaging set of rewards.
Completely agree with you.
That make it to where I want to go do it. And not the simple binary of, well, I can shoot the guy and go through the door and keep playing, or I can spend 5 minutes fooling around with stealth and figure out how to get past him and go through the door, and it won't have mattered a hill of beans.
I completely agree
with you. And that's the challenge, right?
Exactly.
You've got,
And the most glaring piece of it, and this is where we get back into like the ludonarrative dissonance thing, is that we still are in a point where we'll let these characters, no matter who they are, become mass murderers and just keep on merrily going down the game for the sake of game mechanic.
Well,
right?
A game that did it differently this generation was Dishonored.
I'm just going to bring that up myself.
If you killed a bunch of people, it would increase the amount of rats in the play.
Yeah, I thought Harvey was genius with the way he did that.
I mean, whether or not you felt that was successful, that is at least giving you, it's like, okay, you've made this option in terms of gameplay. This is the consequence of that option. And I think that worked in most cases for people. I mean, when I played Last of Us, though, I know the option is there to play it stealthy, but I didn't care. I wasted everyone. Because for me, it was the game had already established that Joel was that person. Do whatever he wants to do to survive, and he is a violent person, and there's discussion about his past.
But sometimes it's just easier to survive without engaging enemies, you know?
Sometimes it's easier to progress by just killing everyone, too.
I totally agree, but I think...
And it's weird, because it's easier to just get into a room and kill a bunch of humans than it is to kill the monsters in that game. I would say that it's a lot easier to... I mean, there
depends.
Are no...
How cool would it
There are
be?
No humans in that game that can one-shot you the way that a clicker can.
No.
So it's easier for you to avoid the clickers.
There's that one point in the game.
Sure, but I mean, like, okay. The prime characters that you face up against are going to be these monsters or the humans. And for me, it was a lot easier to just waste all the humans and try to get all of their gear from them, which was another narrative reason for me to do it. But I was going to kill them and take their stuff.
How cool would it have been if you have this whole survival element of the game, you're collecting supplies to live, to move forward. And what if every time you engaged human beings rather than the infected, what if you had the option to sort of, like in The Road, make a kind of a bargain? and say, you know what, I'll give you some of the bandages that I found to get past here.
The AI humans in that game have no value for their own life, and they will rush you until you're dead.
Well, that's what I'm saying. What if it was a different kind of game?
Well, yeah, it would have to be.
I think so. By the way, you just glossed. It would have to be designed around that.
Yeah, I think. And that's what I'm...
I Am Alive tried to do that.
Yeah.
Where you would put a gun up to a guy and...
Did anyone here play that?
I did.
Did it work?
No.
No.
Okay.
Because it was interesting because you'd pull your gun out, they'd get scared, and you had to shoot them. Because if you didn't shoot them, they'd just rush you. They had no regard for their own life. And I think that AI advancing needs to be given that regard of, okay, you clearly have killed the last 9 guys who came up against you that I used to chill out with. Maybe I'll fuck off. Like,
yeah.
AI doesn't do that. They just want
to
stop
to be
you.
Cannon fodder.
Right. And the problem with shooters, too, like Modern Warfare and all this, it's like the AI only focuses its attention on you. Mm-hmm. Because there are times in Last of Us where you can wait in a bathroom and Ellie's in the middle of the doorway and AI will be standing right next to her. They'll completely ignore her or they'll completely ignore
other
characters.
Which, by the way, they admitted that they did that on purpose.
Well, yeah. Because then you'd get frustrated. You would get frustrated by her. It would break the game.
There's
so
many times where I'm like sneaking and she's like doing laps by me back and forth. Like, dude, the dudes are going to be so freaked out that this chick is running.
I remember being like so frustrated in like one of the Call of Duty games where like I'm part of a squad and like literally every soldier is shooting at me.
At you. And your squad is just like behind them, like running in circles.
They're just like playing poker and like giving each other high fives.
I mean, it's a problem that games have, and we've talked about this before. And I think, you know, the bigger problem for me in Last of Us is something we talked about during the break, which is like Joel is literally the worst survivor in the world because we talked about this where it is, my bullets are full and there's a whole pack of bullets here. Fuck it. I'll just leave it because I don't need bullets. You have a fucking knapsack. Yeah, you need bullets. It's the end of the world.
He can carry 9 rifle cartridges. Okay.
Oh, it's
nine.
So stupid. It's like when the game and the narrative doesn't mesh like that. That's ludonarrative dissonance to me. And it bothers me. That's when it kills me.
I think the first sentence of his question that we're answering, where he says, you guys seem to want the disappearance of violence to solve problems. It's not that I want to be able to tackle the exact same problem by just avoiding it or whatever, which seems to be the case with games now. It's like you can be stealthy and just sneak away or you can kill. Well, what I long for is what we're talking about, a more sophisticated experience you can like, hey, you know, I encounter these people and I can choose to kill them, or I can choose to bargain with them, or I can choose to, you know, handle the situation in completely different ways, which I think is
like the first Deus Ex.
Right.
Man, that was so ahead of its time.
And in Last of Us you can knock people out rather than kill them too.
But that's not to me, from
I'm
a gameplay
in terms
perspective,
of violent level.
When people say, oh, you can go through Metal Gear Solid and not kill anyone, I'm still shooting them in the head because it's a tranquilizer dart. It doesn't friggin' matter. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about like what the bullet does to them. If the bullet puts them to sleep versus kills them, that makes no difference.
It's
really
just a new texture that shows up. It's either Z's or blood.
Right. What I'm talking about is like literally having new gameplay procedures.
I think that's part of the reason that the folks who advocated playing Last of Us on a higher difficulty were advocating that, in that that does sort of build in a reward mechanism, in that you are very ammo limited, and that by being stealthy, you leave yourself in a position to go loud when you need to and have to, and you're still equipped to do it. Because if you just go guns blazing, you won't be able to survive. Mm-hmm. So that's
an
interesting way.
Usually when I was being stealthy in that game, I was still murdering people.
Well, then and I agree. I was just saying that I think that's part of it. And back to the original thing, I think it's about reward systems, and I think it's about just getting better at giving people alternatives. And right. Then when you give them an alternative, make it meaningful. Like back to your very reductionist deal of like, there's a door and I want to get through the door and there's a guy between me and there. If shooting him is the same as any other thing, then you're probably going to shoot him because you shoot him and you drop and you move on. And we are like wanting to advance. Just like when you're reading a book, you want to turn the next page, and you're watching a show, you want to see the next minute of the series.
Right.
But when there's a good reason to do it a different way, then you'll do it a different way.
Exactly.
Should we get one more in before we go to the break?
Yes.
How about we got a bunch on next? You guys still want to talk about next gen console stuff a lot?
We're talking about games for 2010.
It's been too. Yeah, we don't want to go future, but we'll go past.
How about this? This will be a quick one to wrap up before we go to break. Pixel Ryan posted this. Were you ever a fanboy in previous console wars, and what console did you side with?
No.
No? Never?
I was total Nintendo fanboy, like, through and through. So NES,
I mean,
SNES, N64. I loved my GameCube. I still love my GameCube. And then I guess it was during the Wii generation where it's like, yeah, I guess Nintendo's not making systems for me anymore.
I bought Super Nintendo over a Genesis, and I bought a Dreamcast over a PlayStation initially, but I didn't react to them as fanboys. I reacted to them like, God, I wish I could get both.
Yeah,
and I just pined away.
Dude, yeah, I wish I could buy them too. Because I got a Genesis as a graduation gift instead of a Super Nintendo. I was like, all right, this is cool. Plays Madden great. And it's got Phantasy Star. Excellent.
Yeah.
And so I became the guy who was like playing those games.
And even before that, I was a PC guy, and all I wanted in the world was a freaking Amiga. I wanted an Amiga so bad because it had all the best games on it. But people probably don't even know.
I mean,
know
the
what
thing is, yeah,
about.
now that I have a job, it's not really hard to be a fanboy because I can actually just buy all the consoles. But right. When I was younger, when I had to rely on, you know, this is my Christmas gift, this is a. You know, this is my allowance, and this is what I have to save up on. Yeah, I definitely sided with one platform over the other.
I can't say why, but the closest I've ever been to being fanboy was, for whatever reason, I fell hopelessly in love with Dreamcast. I loved Dreamcast. I loved the games that were on it. I loved...
And you loved being able to burn games on CD and just...
Bleem? Are you talking about Bleem?
I for me, it was only ever, never consoles, but franchises, specifically sports games, where I like the ESPN NFL game, the 2K release
in
2005
really good.
Versus the Madden, or the NHL game that EA released versus like NHL Stanley Cup, which was that Super Nintendo game that was awful.
Yeah, and I think it probably was games for Dreamcast. I mean, Soul Calibur right off the bat got me, and Sonic Adventure, and just like, I don't know. Just had
the Dreamcast had such a great library, and then I loved when Sega made games for Xbox. Remember, that entire slate of games was just so terrific.
I truly loved Sonic Adventure.
I did too.
I truly loved that game.
It was a good one. All right. We got one more segment to go, so stick around. We still have some more questions from you. We will tackle a little new stuff, all that and more, as we wind up going into the final session here of We Can Confirm. Got a big tune, though, coming up for you right now. I love that little game sounding sample in that track. It's one of my faves. Anyway, we have a lot to get through, so we will waste no time and plow right on through. So you guys wrote in with a lot of next gen console stuff. We'll rip through some of this stuff and see how much conversation it starts. My multiple S's. What effect does the $100 bump in the entry to the next gen as compared to this gen, along with most major titles being cross-generational, have on next gen post-launch? In other words, will it take something like a couple extra years to build a foundation this time around?
No. All right, moving on.
All right. Anyone else? I mean, no one else debate? Nothing.
Well, PS4 is a lot cheaper than PS3, so
yeah,
that's something. So in terms, if you're
reflected for inflation, yes.
Well, no, not just reflected for. It's not $599 yeah. US dollars.
I bought the PlayStation 3. I think in Canada, I think it was $699 when I bought it.
So you know, just because the Xbox One is more expensive than the Xbox 360 doesn't mean that the cost of gaming in the next generation has increased. You do have a cheaper alternative.
I also think the electronics as a whole are in a completely different place than when those consoles were released, in that people are used to spending money on cell phones and pad.
Yeah, people are willing tablets. To pay, you know, $500 for a new iPad every year.
Yeah.
So I think
it's going to be a really big launch.
I think the ramp up to the next generation is going to be slower than it was this generation, because in this generation, Microsoft was so quick to get out of Xbox and to 360 that they abandoned that platform and were like, okay, well, now we're going to focus on this. But now, because they have been the more successful of the two, at least in North America, between PlayStation 3 and the Xbox 360, they need to ensure that that ramp up to the next generation isn't as abrupt, because they still have a lot of people buying 360s. They're still making 360s. They're still selling that console. They still have new games coming out this holiday season for it. So they need to.
And I think that the argument to try and get people who aren't holiday shopping and hardcore gamer or core gamers to buy a new system this fall is pretty tough. You've got Grand Theft Auto, and at the same time, that's like the stalwart. But then you've also got the new hotness like Watch Dogs and whatever it is, you know, whatever we think of where Assassin's Creed is going, the next Assassin's Creed. All of these are coming out on current gen consoles.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a great time to stick to your current gen console. And for me personally, like, there isn't really a next gen game that I'm.
So I thought you said no, Andrew Yoon. You said no, it wasn't going to take extra time.
No, I still don't think it's going to take extra time, but I think there's a lot of pent up demand for it amongst hardcore gamers, and that's really going to power it for at least the first year or two. And then but because they're using such easily sourced parts, like, prices are going to go down pretty quickly, I would say. So I think it's really,
well, manufacturing costs will go down. We'll see if the actual price on the console goes down.
We'll see, but I think there's a lot of reason to not go into the next gen if you already have a current gen system, but there's plenty of desire and demand for next gen amongst hardcore, and as long as the hardcore is happy, you know, next gen's going to do
the
fine.
The Game Critics Award for basically best in show is Titanfall, which is a 360 game and also a PC game.
Swept the shit out of everything.
Pretty much.
By the way, we could hit that real quick since we just were talking about it. Actually, people have some questions about E3. Game Critic Awards, best of E3 2013, Titanfall came and Titanfall conquered. Best of show, best original game, best console game, best PC game, best action game, and best online multiplayer. Thank you very much. Drop the mic. Seriously.
Drop the Titan.
Fall to Titan.
And there was some confusion, I think, because I think in our comments and Joystick, people were saying, well, it wasn't even playable at E3. It actually was playable for the judges.
Yeah.
Awesome looking game. I don't know if it's that much better than everything else that it needs to sweep all the categories,
so, but unfortunately, the way awards are awesome set up, and if you you've heard us talk about these in editorial discussions before, like, if the game is best of show, how can it not be the best console game? Because if it's the best game, then it must be the best in whatever group. Then that also means it must be the best action, and it must be the best PC as well.
So I didn't vote Titanfall as best console game because according to the like fine print, it had to be demoed on the console itself. But we played it on a PC that wasn't necessarily spec'd to Xbox One. So technically, it shouldn't have won best console game. But technically might shouldn't have won best PC game either, because, like, I don't know. Like, you know, just it's really confusing. So.
This year was kind of confusing with all the fine print for the judges stuff.
You know, and I think that what it does is really interesting. The only argument I could raise there is, how does it win best original game? Because to me, it is, you know, very much treading on shooter ground.
I think the definition of original is just based on IP, not necessarily mechanics.
Yeah, it's not a sequel.
Yeah.
It has original mechanics too. I mean, there's the wall running and stuff.
And once again, the
at least for a first person shooter, it's
the balance of the battle between, you know, ground troops and the Titans. I think they do really good.
And also the wall running stuff, I guess, was in Brink, so that's not super original either.
But I think there's a lot of small ideas that add up to a really interesting effect. So
thought it was cool to see that Tearaway did indeed capture best handheld and mobile. I think that's
very
well deserved. I thought it deserved consideration for best of show. So
I think it deserves
a game now. The first time we saw it wasn't it wasn't a game, and now it's a game.
Well, it's a game, but more importantly, it's a toy. I think that's something that people aren't really like too aware of. Tearaway, it is a platformer from Media Molecule. It has a lot of that LBP DNA, Little Big Planet DNA, but it also just really makes playing with the Vita a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is a great, great testament for the game. In the E3 of the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, the best hardware went to the Oculus Rift.
Well deserved. You know,
I agree. It was the most mind-blowing thing I saw the whole show was putting on that Oculus Rift and doing the EV.
That was next-gen hardware.
It was crazy. But I also think that is a bit of a we don't want to pick favorite child.
No. Like what? Okay, so PS4, yeah, that's like a nice piece of kit at a really great price. But like, what is it doing new other than offering you prettier graphics? Right. Like
same thing with the Xbox.
It's a PC. It's a PC that's in a smaller, prettier box. But Oculus actually provides a completely different experience.
I'm not arguing with that. Yeah. I think the Oculus Rift, like I said, it changed my perspective on what gaming can be.
For me, in terms of the like hardware nominations, I put the DualShock. So I think the DualShock 4 is really nice.
Yeah.
I put Kinect because I think the new Kinect is really cool. So I think the platforms as a whole aren't necessarily the best quote unquote hardware, but they do feature some really cool things. So like that DualShock is great to play with.
I think innovation was really key with this category.
Yeah.
And oh, definitely. Oculus Rift is definitely in there.
So it's definitely not a.
Did you play EVR?
No, unfortunately, I couldn't.
Oh, my God. Did you play EVR at all, Jeff?
Yeah, I did.
It's amazing.
It's you're inside mind-blowing.
The thing that I loved about it is like you're inside this launch tube like Battlestar, and there's all these noises and things going off, and then it launches you, and it's just the dead silence of space
for a few seconds, and
then everything ramps up.
It is.
It's amazing. And that was the 720p kit.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the 1080p kit.
I did.
With Unreal Engine 4.
I did.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's got more P's.
So well, it's P's. High def.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
When people care about, like, you know, 1080p on your fucking iPhone, like, you know, like, you should care when it's, like, on your eyeballs and simulating a whole new reality.
Yeah.
The feel-good story.
Bonkers. For the, both of those.
The feel-good story of these awards has to be Watch Dogs, because last year, of course, had the great debut video, but then lots of questions about, like, okay, what's the game, and is there anything more than just, like...
And the reason why it couldn't get nominated last year was because it wasn't playable.
Right.
It was just an idea, so that's why, you know, something like The Division can't be nominated this year.
Yeah, so really nice payoff for the Watch Dogs to deliver on that with a really good playable demo, and I'm super excited for that game this fall. Interesting that in role-playing games, the Elder Scrolls Online takes that crown. No one would have expected that.
Well, I'm sorry that Witcher 3 didn't win.
Playable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Elder Scrolls Online is such an improvement over what they showed a year ago, and it is so exciting for what they're bringing to the MMO genre. Where there really is. It's starting with role-playing game and making it massively multiplayer rather than just kind of plugging into the conventions of what MMOs have become.
Which is a big problem last year.
Yeah.
When they showed up.
But you got to say, the surprise is in racing, where not Forza, not Gran Turismo, but Need for Speed Rivals from a new developer takes the crown. That's amazing.
I will say that game... is the reason why I think that one is the stories I heard of people talking about it after they played it. Like Ludwig, who was the judge for Joystick, was talking about how he was in the middle of a race on a mountainside, and then all of a sudden another group of cars being chased by cops passed him going the other direction because they're in one persistent world. And it was all of these races happening, and how you can, if he were to turn around and join those guys, it would have turned into a co-op match automatically on the fly. And now all those cops are chasing the three of you.
You would have to hit R1 in order to trigger the thing.
All right.
It's not completely automatic.
You hit a button.
You don't want to be like dragged.
You're hitting button. I'm going to break something to you. You're hitting buttons anyway.
You don't want to drag. I'm just saying, it's not like you're driving in your race and then like someone else.
You're not
going
to throw a fucking batarang and just like connect yourself to the other car.
It's like you sort of made it sound like, oh, and you'll just be automatically dragged into other race that you didn't want
vortex.
To be a part
yeah, okay,
of.
So clarity for the world and the internet listening. You hit a button, and now you're playing the fucking game. But those stories of you have that option to do that, and these aren't people who were invited to your game. You're just there because they're on your friends list or whatever. That stuff I thought was those stories, like stories we had when we were playing, you know, Elder Scrolls and all these other games that just happened on the fly. That is what I think won this category.
I mean, it certainly it has that group appeal that like the Burnout Paradise and like other Criterion games have, but without all the waiting. I mean, that was always like the worst thing, just sitting at a point, just being like, all right, I'm just going to wait here for the next 15 minutes, hoping my friends show up.
You know? There's no menu option. You just, it's there.
It's also really pretty. It's also really, really pretty.
So, rounding them out, the Canadians outvoted the Europeans, so NHL took the sports over FIFA.
Sports game that is not going next gen at launch. Won the sports category.
And FIFA for next gen, I'm pretty impressed with, but that's a whole other subject. And then strategy, Total War Rome 2. Creative Assembly back with another winner, apparently. So that's a nice little lineup, although, wow, Titanfall just sweeping them away. Not uncommon, it happens with them a lot. And then as long as we're in...
Last year, it was The Last of Us that pretty much swept everything.
Same sort of thing, right?
And that turned out okay, right?
I don't know, we're not allowed to talk about it on this episode.
We're talking about EVE Online about from the 20s.
Yeah, we're going to talk about World of Tanks some more.
So, I got my Panzer.
Dragoon?
Let's see. Don Matrick has left Microsoft. He is no longer the head of Interactive Entertainment. He's taken the role of CEO at Zynga.
From one burning building to another.
Or as one illustration on the net showed it, him jumping from the stern of one sinking ship to the stern of another sinking ship.
Yeah. He just really likes Assassin's Creed 4. Yeah, just living the dream there. That was a terrible joke.
Sinking ship.
There
are a lot of threads to that joke. It's
very nuanced. In a few years, you're going to look back at that as a terrific joke. But for now, I'm just going to be quiet now.
We don't really know what happened. Obviously, there's been some discussion as to whether or not it's been in the works for a while. There have been rumors that it has been in the works. I think that if it had been in the works for a while, that while it was a great unified front for Don to be out in front of the, you know, Xbox One launch as the guy who's been the chief of the entertainment operations, that to then have him resign afterwards was not a good plan.
Yeah, we only have like 5 stock photos of Xbox One, and one of them is him holding the console. So like 20% of our images on our site involve him. So really, they should have thought that through a bit better.
And I would just say that isn't a well thought out plan. And maybe
do you think he was in a meeting and he was like, "Guy, everybody knows I'm only going to be here for about 2 more weeks, but who thinks we should reverse everything we've been saying?"
Yeah,
all right, see you guys.
The exciting part now is Steve Ballmer is in charge while they're looking for someone else.
What's Jay Allard doing?
I don't know, growing some patch doing? Somewhere.
I think the upside
Velocity
of
Girl
this,
making skateboard covers.
Does he still work at Microsoft, Jay Allard?
He sort of disappeared after Zune. Right?
Yeah, he was on the Zune team.
I don't know what happened to him.
I just imagine him like up in the mountains in a cabin, like with a long beard, hunting deer, and like there's a knock at his door, and they're like, Jay, we need you. We need you to come out of retirement. He's like,
There was a
video games.
There was a report. I don't know if it was Fortune.
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
There was this report about Don Matrick. I think it was Fortune was saying that the reason why they claimed inside sources said that the reason why he wanted to leave is because he was going to be named basically the boss of the entire Xbox division. They were going to restructure it, and it's just going to be an Xbox division. He was going to be the boss. He realized that wasn't a promotion, but really a sidestep, and decided to go elsewhere because he wanted to continuously be promoted. I don't know, that is unspecified sources on, I think it was Fortune that said it, I can't really remember exactly.
It's a nice opportunity for Microsoft to clean and reset the rest of the table to go with the 180 degree reversal policy. So I hope that they'll do, honestly, I've been thinking about it. Kevin Dent brought this up on Twitter. I think Phil Spencer would be a great inspirational person to step in there. I really like Phil a lot. I really like
or his. Harrison.
Yeah,
Harrison would be really interesting too.
So
that would be really weird.
The fake Kazurai account on Twitter, which is a terrific account that everyone should follow.
It is a great.
He tweeted at Harrison.
He's
being
available.
Like, he tweeted at Harrison being like, "Yes, operation, you know, like operation, like bring down the Xbox continues.
Operation
continue
infiltrate.
Continue your infiltration, you know."
Harrison is, it would be an interesting candidate. It was funny at E3 when he was on the Microsoft stage and said, "It's nice to be on this stage," and emphasized that point. But I don't know. I would like Spencer to do it too, because I think he works better with the developers. But at the same time, he is not going to be in charge of Microsoft Studios anymore. What happens to that relationship? And they're not doing a great job with like independence over there right now. It's very much focused on large corporations. And
I have confidence that he would still keep an eye on that. And I think from that position, that would be even more powerful than just him being in charge of the studios. By virtue of being looking over the whole thing and empowering someone to step into the role that he had, I think that's even more valuable.
Like Aaron Greenberg would be good in his spot now. Phil Spencer's current spot is like head of Microsoft Studios, but
why don't we just why don't you think outside the box though? You know, like
outside the Xbox.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I think there's a romantic element that says, yeah, it would be great to bring in some new blood, but I think also that Microsoft is a huge corporation in which operating takes a lot of time to.
But if the rumor is true about there being this huge shakeup that's supposed to happen, I think Microsoft would benefit from having.
Well, who knows? Maybe Meg Whitman's still looking for a job.
I think you're going to find that who they're going to select is going to be someone who's very business-oriented, like Don Matrick, and probably someone who doesn't have a video game history. At least Don had a video game history working in the industry for a long time with EA.
I just want Peter. I want Peter Moore to leave EA and go to Microsoft.
Maybe they'll get Riccatello.
Maybe. Oh, yeah, he's available, right?
Online passes are back.
All right. So as long as we're on that subject, Almighty Adam threw this one out to us. Said, given that Xbox One will no longer require an online connection, is it safe to assume devs may no longer be enticed to take advantage of cloud processing? Is it also safe to assume that given the PS4's superior specs, that games will naturally look much better and run smoother on the Sony's console?
Multi-platform games, no, because they're always going to develop for scale. That's why you get Xbox 360 and PS3 games look exactly the same now, or PC games that don't use engines.
Multi-platform games still run better on 360 than on PS3.
Sometimes, but look at the differences between PC and console. PC can scale a lot better than console, but they always scale for console because they scale down, they don't scale up.
Yeah, but I think still, their 360 usually gets a slight edge. I mean, the thing is, the people that really obsess over... You know, which platform is better? Like, it's such a minuscule difference. I mean, so long as it's not like a Skyrim situation where like one version is just like completely unplayable. Right. You know, so long as you can avoid that, you know, that I don't think the difference between Xbox One and PlayStation.
What about adoption of cloud services?
Some games I think it'll work really well. The Titanfall explanation has been really solid, which is we're going to use it to spin off dedicated servers, which would cost us a ton of money as an independent studio. We couldn't do it. Microsoft has all these servers that we can just activate.
But, you know, let's not forget that Titanfall uses those same cloud servers for the 360 and PC version of Titanfall. So,
and it is a multiplayer game, so it assumes that the player will be connected to the internet and playing the game.
It's an always-on game. Yeah.
So the question really becomes, how will, and I think this is still like a very open question, how will this mysterious cloud computing capability that Microsoft has been touting for the Xbox figure into single player game experiences?
I really don't think you've already heard my rant about this, and I think the Titanfall explanation sort of explains.
But they haven't heard it.
I think that I have. I think that the potential, we'll see how this all shakes out, obviously, but the potential is that instead of the box of the Xbox One's retail box having the little thing that says requires internet connection on it, individual games may have that. Individual games may have a little thing that says requires an internet connection to play. So that Destiny. just may be a semantics thing, really.
Sure. Like, yeah. Destiny is always on. Titanfall is always on. So.
You guys may have a little tough time with this, but Brufus, who's a new listener, welcome to the show, Brufus. Says, for my money, The Last of Us and Bioshock Infinite are the two best games I played in years. While both are different experiences, they nail just about everything I want in video games today. Which one of these two would you put above the other?
Well, I think story-wise, I would put Last of Us above Bioshock, and mechanics-wise, I'd put Bioshock above Last of Us. I had more fun swinging around on rails and playing with plasmids than I did smashing people with bricks in the face. Personally,
I'd agree with that. I thought there was a lot of mechanical issues with Last of Us that I had just fun playing.
But you know what? I would add a third game to that trio.
Yes, XCOM.
Ooh, that's good. But no, Tomb Raider.
Huh? I would not. Actually, for as much as I was down on Tomb Raider, and people who have listened hopefully understand this, that my complaint with Tomb Raider was my love and what I wanted Tomb Raider to still be Tomb Raider, is that as an action game, the new Tomb Raider was a really good action game. Mm-hmm. A really, really good action game. And
yep.
It's definitely going to be in there. If this is any indication so far, it's still in there swinging strong for, you know, best game of the year.
Indeed.
Andrew, you have an opinion on that?
I can't because I haven't played Bioshock Infinite. So.
Ah, okay.
I'll get around to it one of these days once I'm done getting every trophy in Uncharted 3. You very, very angrily.
I can let you borrow it if you want.
Why do you hate play? Why do you
I
hate fucking?
No, seriously, if you ever look at my PSN like trophy list, it's disgusting. It's like every
just punishing yourself.
Every game is at 100%, even if it has like 7 expansion packs. By the way, I begrudgingly do that.
I happen to really like Uncharted 3, so I'm not agreeing with you. I'm not.
Ooh, where would you put Uncharted 2 on that list?
On which list?
On this list.
Well, this was just for this year, but...
Well, no. He said in years.
In years as well.
Years.
Because I mean, for a lot of people, Uncharted 2 was the perfect game.
Mm-hmm.
The perfect cheer. I don't know. I think...
It's... Because Last of Us and Bioshock are so new, of course we're going to be like, oh man, that's like one of the best, but you sort of have to wait. You sort of have to
Uncharted
really,
2 definitely is
one. You really have to wait and think back.
Actually, I think I changed my mind. I think I would go with Bioshock Infinite over Last of Us, because although I like Last of Us' story, it is just so telegraphed from the beginning. Like, it's every monster movie. It's where it goes, what happens. It's sort of, I mean, it's not bad, but I think that a lot of that it's very inspired by. And I would put Bioshock ahead of Last of Us. I'm already getting people pissed off because I already said that. PlayStation's dying. I yelled about a Final Fantasy expansion that didn't exist. I mean, whatever.
For as much as people think that I was down on it, I would, without you know, a moment of hesitation, tell you that Last of Us is the one for me. Even out of all three of those, still the best game for this year that I played.
I mean, Last of Us is probably one of my favorite games ever, and I just say that after immediately saying, oh, we should really think, you know, back at the, but for me it's because of the mechanics. Actually, I really love the mechanics,
and it's funny because
game.
For me it's because of the characters, and
yeah, that's what kills it for me, because I think the characters in that are probably better. I don't know, let me think about it.
By the way, I still stand behind my I know people made fun of me about this, but I still stand behind my assertion that the first hour of Bioshock Infinite would be my game of the year.
I did play the first
few hours of Bioshock Infinite, and those are terrific.
It goes way downhill after that, but in my estimation, but the first hour of Bioshock Infinite is some of the finest gaming of all time.
I would agree. You know what? I would totally agree with that, too.
Yeah,
I would totally agree with that.
I still think F-Zero GX is the best game of the generation. Sure, it came out last generation, but you know what? Wii is backwards compatible. F-Zero
GX. There was that whole hidden mode in there the whole time. You didn't know about it?
F-Zero AX! Oh, my God.
All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that. We had a great time with it. If you want us to do it again, hop into the thread for this week's show over the holiday period. Let us know you'd like to do it again. We can bring it back over the summer. We'll have plenty of time. Jeff won't be here.
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to Australia.
But he's still here for another week or two. So, you know, we got lots of shows coming up. We'll have more World of Tanks and EVE Online discussion.
And then we'll have another Last of Us spoiler cast when he's in Australia.
Yes.
Good.
Great.
That'll be fun.
Idea.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Time for us to knock out those closing moves.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
Yeah, I know. They're called finishing moves. All right. Anyway, I could not be more excited about this little piece of news that came out on Gamma Sutra yesterday, which is that the trio of founders for the Belgian developer Appeal, which has long since been shuttered, who made in 1999 one of my all-time super favorite games, Outcast, have bought back the IP rights from the dead wreckage of Apple. Now, they were trying to make an Outcast 2 Once Upon a Day, and that project, it had a very rocky road and eventually died and went away. Anything that could bring back Outcast of any form would be amazing. It's one of the most meaningful and like powerful game experiences I've ever had. It was great and meaningful. Not powerful like just in the game, but like to me is like one of those games that was like so affirming of like, oh my God, I love games and this is like what it's all about. A fantastic adventure game that combines like so much like Zelda, Grand Theft Auto, sci-fi, cool story, and yet it's still campy in ways, but I think it's on good old games and it is absolutely a gem, even if it was done in voxels. Voxels were cool back then. Everyone wanted to be voxels, like Delta Force was in voxels, and it's gonna be the future, man. We're all gonna do voxels. All right, anyway, I'm excited, and hopefully something will come of it. Who knows? The three co-founders of Appeal have at least have the rights, so something might ultimately happen with it. Sav, how about you?
First of all, thanks a lot for having me, guys. It's always fun hanging out with you. And if you want to hear me talk about nonsense like PlayStation dying and other bullshit that's coming out of my mouth this episode, then you can listen to the Super Joystick Podcast every week on joystick.com. And I didn't talk about Saints Row 4. We didn't get to it because we were getting all to the new stuff like EVE Online and World of Tanks.
Yeah,
and all.
No time for talking about Saints Row 4, bro.
All the new hotness. But we have a video preview going up on Joystick, which will be available by the time you hear this episode. And I'll be talking about it on the Joystick Podcast as well. We also have some information and previews coming for D4, Swery 65's new game, and Quantum Break, comparing those two games. Strangely, both of those games are time travel mysteries, so we did a whole feature on comparing those two games and how they've gone in different directions.
And very inspired by television as well.
Yes, I mean, the interesting thing about doing the research for that feature was that Swery 65's last game, or one of the last games he did, was Deadly Premonition, which was very heavily inspired by things like Twin Peaks, or at least had inspiration. Alan Wake.
He denies that, actually.
He denies that when it was a game called, was it Rainy Woods? It was much more Twin Peaks, and then they dumbed it down, but it's still Twin Peaks, guys.
It's a game, it used to be called Two Mountains.
That's what it used to
that
be called
look
Rainy
exactly
Woods
the same
it.
As each other.
And Alan Wake, also another game that Remedy did, also inspired by Twin Peaks, sort of interesting how they've, again, sort of tapped the same vein of creativity or inspiration with their upcoming games that are both Xbox One exclusives. Which
do you know
is,
why it's called D4?
Yeah, it's Dead Dreams Don't Die.
Yeah.
Dark Dreams Don't Die. Also, it's Four Dimensions. Also, yeah, he said all that. We had the same interview. He was a very canned interview that he did with everyone.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
No, but he's just such a bizarre character.
He's a great character. He's really eccentric. Also, he loves popcorn, or loves you being able to watch and play his game while eating popcorn. He mentioned popcorn a lot.
And well, you know, yeah. And with Kinect, you don't have to get your controller messy. You know?
He was very, very, very that's adamant nice. About that. So two games that follow the
finally,
same
someone
theme.
Thinking about that for me.
Two games that follow the same theme compared. We have a feature going up this week on Joystick, so look out for that as well. And I don't think the PlayStation is dying. I'm just getting over being mm-hmm. sick. I'm crazy. Mm-hmm. I apologize. I'll hear about it on the comments.
Nobody remembers you saying that except you.
It was dumb, so that's why I remember saying it.
Andrew, how about you? Got a finishing move for us today?
I will be at Anime Expo this weekend. Ooh. So if any listeners...
What are you dressing up as?
You know, I actually do cosplay a lot, and everyone just laughed, right? Okay, it's true. I cosplay a lot.
I didn't laugh.
But
do you honestly though?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but I signed up for Anime Expo like way, way too soon, so I just didn't have the time to really.
What would
think
you
about
go
late?
The thing is, so I haven't watched anime in so long that I don't know what the new hotness is. Like, what do kids watch nowadays?
Just dress up like Pacific Rim and say
your
Neon
care,
Genesis.
Dude? What's your care? Your main character that you dress up as?
No, I always do a different character. So the last character I did was someone from... wow, it's been so long, I don't even remember the name of the show.
Akira.
Have you guys heard of it?
One of the first cosplays I ever did was the main character of Persona 3. Also Yugi from Yu-Gi-Oh! And I actually grew my hair was like super long at the time, so I actually spiked it. It took like 3 hours to do my hair. It was totally worth it.
It's like me in the morning now.
And I am so cool because I'm because I did all of this. So if you guys are going to Anime Expo, please let me know what I should be watching, what panels I should be attending, because like I said, I've been so out of the anime scene for so long that I...
So this is just you personally going? It's not like...
Yeah, it's just for me because I'm cool. Like, wow, I'm in LA. Anime Expo is like the biggest anime thing in America, and I feel like I should go. So I really hope that there's other anime loving nerds that listen to this and can give me some feedback.
It's in downtown LA this time, right? It used to be in Anaheim, right?
It's in the convention center, so it's like being back at E3.
but everyone
smells a little bit worse.
Aww.
Or better?
Or better.
It'll be debatable. I'll let you guys know.
Jeff, you get to bring it home.
I'll just do a quick roundup of some of the other things I've been playing. Yes, I finished Last of Us. Can't talk about it. Garnet won't let me. Loving Magic Tools of the Planeswalkers 2014. I mentioned that a little bit. Maybe I'll do a YouTube video about Last of Us.
The things Garnet won't let me tell you about Last of Us.
There's so many things that Garnet would just...
It has to be like one of those webcam things, too. You have to be like really intense about it and then like jump cut into the screen. And this is what he didn't want you to hear.
Garnet's going to stab me in the throat with a brick.
That's not how stabbing and throats and
I played that game a lot.
I think I know why he had problems with
pretty
that game.
Sure I played it. He threw a bottle in the other direction, and then I looked away, and then he stabbed me with a brick. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah, Duels with Planeswalkers is great. I've been playing it on an iPad. I have had some weird stuttering issues, but I don't know if it's just my iPad. But it's so great. I recommend getting it on Steam and 360, which I've every year I buy it on all three and play it on all three because I'm weird like that.
Do you just single player or do you multiplayer also?
I have only ever single played, but I'm so excited about the sealed decks. This is the new feature this year that I'm going to venture into multiplayer just because that's the only way to do that.
It's fair.
Oh, but it sounds so awesome. But you can only do one per, whatchamacallit, account. So, yeah.
Well, that's why you have four different copies.
Exactly. Also been playing, I have to mention, also on iOS, the...
Solstice Arena.
Solstice Arena, which I only played because you recommended it, and it is, it is excellent. It is well done, and plays really well, even with touchscreen controls.
And it's
super
Zynga.
Impressed.
Super Zynga. Surprising it's Zynga.
Yeah. And
well, it's a studio they bought.
I want to mention Gunpoint again because that game is amazing, and we talked about it a while ago. But it's so it is on my shortlist for Game of the Year as well. It is that good and so fun and interesting. So those are some of the things that have been keeping me busy.
Code Geass, that's the name of the show that I cosplayed. I did a lay loose from Code Geass. There we go. I just needed to say that before the episode ended.
One more thing. Because I can't stop thinking about The Witcher 3, I reinstalled The Witcher 2, and they just released a new gigantic multi-gigabyte patch that redoes all the combat, and it's supposed to be awesome, so I'm going to be doing that, hopping into that.
So in case anyone
excited.
Gets confused, it's not technically a patch, it's a mod.
Right,
so
true, but it's done by...
It's really easy, it's done by the lead combat designer, right. it's not speculative or anything, but what you do need to do is you need to install the mod pack so that you can install the mod on top, and then there are a few...
It's so easy, though, you just...
It's super easy, and it does also bork the tutorial sections, because...
But that's
very,
all right.
I'm just saying,
they added
I'm
those
letting
in
people,
later anyway.
I'm letting people know who might not have played before or get engaged. It's a great time to go play it. It has a new combat system out of three, which includes a new parry and riposte system, which is really cool.
Yeah,
it's worth doing.
And that does not look like a 2-year-old game. That it looks like it is.
It never
so
did in the
sexy.
First place.
Yeah.
So
it is a very
Witcher 2 definitely. That's what I should play this summer.
Yeah,
that's what I should play this summer.
I'm so excited about the combat rebalancing. Sounds so interesting. I can't wait to see. I love the idea of someone taking a 2-year-old game and going, let's rebalance the combat. That's so rad. I wish more developers would do that.
Definitely rad. All right. Hope you guys all enjoyed the show. We enjoyed making it for you. We will take a little downtime now for 4th of July, have some burgers and beer, that kind of stuff. Be back next week with a whole brand new show. No World of Tanks. Well, maybe some World of Tanks. No Eve.
It sounds like you're going to keep playing it.
I'm going to keep playing it, but there's other stuff to play. I have to get... People are definitely wanting me to get back to Nier, so I got to do that.
It's more fun than it is good.
What year is this?
I'm just saying. And the name of it just flew out of my head. The downloadable zombie game that came out on Xbox.
Oh, Left 4 Dead. Yeah, I hear it's the new hotness.
I'm gonna take this brick and stab you with it.
Yeah, don't make him stab you with a brick. It hurts, dude.
No, you know what I'm talking about. The game out like
State of Decay.
Oh. Yeah,
which finally got title. Which I was waiting for it to get title update number 2, because this is a sad thing. They did title update number 1, but the publisher forgot to trigger it properly so that it would actually update. People were downloading. You downloaded title update 1, but it didn't apply the patch. It's like you downloaded the patch and it just sat there, and so nothing was fixed.
I need a breather from zombies. I really do. I just need a breather. Just give me a minute.
Last of Us game of the year.
All right. Well, we'll give you a breather until next week. Thanks very much for joining us. Big thanks, of course, to Micah and Del Rio and everybody here at Atlantis Group who take great care of us here in the studio. That's your weekend confirmed. Your holiday confirmed. We're a ghost.
They said I never made it, they called me Zip Zero. But now I'm a lieutenant in this hip-hop bureau. There was a time when I was riding the line, but then they called my number and I'm ready to shine. I sit back, relax, ready to go. Put a little swag with my sick-ass flow. Now
my show. I'm grateful for every single one of y'all. Without your ears, I wouldn't be playing this game at all. We didn't invent it, but we're bringing it here. Get those hands to the skies, let me.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers, with info on over 50,000 console, handheld, iOS, and PC games. Get the Gamefly app for free today on your iPhone, iPad, and Android devices.